This is a Quality News Network. Hezbollah rockets struck the Israeli city of Haifa today as the conflict entered its sixth day. Israel continued its airstrikes into Lebanon, killing more than 40 people and reportedly destroying a long-range missile that could have reached Tel Aviv. In the Mediterranean Sea, U.S. Navy and Marine vessels are preparing a mass evacuation of Americans from Lebanon. Starting tomorrow, those ships, along with a cruise ship and planes chartered by the State Department, will carry away up to 25,000 American citizens. As of today, 64 Americans were known to have left aboard military helicopters. In Gaza City, Israel continues its offensive in a bid to rescue a captured soldier. Airstrikes today destroyed the Palestinian Foreign Ministry building and the offices of a Hamas-led force. Meanwhile, Palestinian gunmen killed one Israeli soldier and wounded six during attacks in the West Bank. Prime Minister Ehud Olmert appears to be backing off his demand that Hezbollah be dismantled as a condition for a ceasefire, but he's still demanding the release of two soldiers captured by the Islamic militant group last Wednesday. He also wants Hezbollah to stop launching rockets into Israel and for Lebanese forces to take over control of the southern border area. In Washington, senators have begun debating whether to use federal funding for stem cell research. It's expected to pass tomorrow, but President Bush is expected to veto the bill. In Southern California, stormy weather has forced firefighters to retreat from the area where they've been fighting a series of wildfires. Nearly 60 homes have so far been burned and more than 130 square miles burned. One person has been killed and 11 firefighters injured. Americans across the country are suffering through a heat wave. Many areas are calling for residents to conserve energy during peak daytime hours. Near Java, at least 86 people were killed in a tsunami prompted by a nearly 8-point earthquake. But more bodies are expected to be found as rescuers continue searching for victims. At the UN, world powers have agreed to send the Iranian issue back to the Security Council. Tehran could be punished for refusing to seriously negotiate over its nuclear program. Debate on the issue could begin next week. On Capitol Hill today, the House approved a U.S.-Russia treaty to help protect polar bears threatened with extinction. It allocates $2 million a year over the next 4 years, but that bill must still be reconciled in the Senate. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Northwest Airlines and its flight attendants union have reportedly reached a tentative agreement after an all-night bargaining session. Details have not yet been released. Airbus has unveiled its new mid-sized A350 plane, which features a newly designed extra-wide body. The company's CEO indicated orders will begin in October and it will go into service by 2012. Boeing's 737 Dreamliner, which rivals Airbus's A350, is reportedly experiencing delays with some suppliers, but a company representative says the plane will still be on budget and on schedule. Commercial space liner Virgin Galactic is accepting deposits for its first space flight in 2008. Each ticket costs $200,000. Industrial production rose 0.8% in June. The Federal Reserve says that reflects more manufacturing, mining, and auto production activity. The U.S. government has awarded IBM a $17 million contract. The funds will be used to provide instant messaging, web conferencing, and other services to the Defense Department. A Ford executive says the company plans to invest nearly $2 billion in Britain to develop hybrid cars. The company hopes to produce a 70-mile-per-gallon Focus model. Light sweet crude settled at $75.30 today. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 8 points, NASDAQ flat, S&P 500 down 2 points. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
now. Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. I got through the weekend. Or as Mark Twain used to write, Sunday, pulled through. Monday is, in fact, my favorite day of the week because it brings me back to you and our conversation, our dialogue about the nature of the American body politic, the polis, as the Greeks might have referred to it. And what happens today? Well, today we just got another little example of what an embarrassment, shall we say, for lack of stronger language, because dear leader was using that, what an embarrassment the man occupying the White House is, not only to the American people, but to the human race. And equally, we found out what an embarrassment the news media is to the American people. Why do I say that? Well, now you all know by now that dear leader, and this is becoming a thing that apparently happens in Russia. If you recall, a couple of weeks back, kind of sleazy Rice got caught on an open mic that she didn't know about. Whining to the Russian foreign secretary about her position. And today it happened again. I don't know. I remember during the Cold War when we tried to build an embassy in Moscow, and it, well, it had more microphones in it than every major network in the United States combined. I remember that. But apparently now the Russians are so sneaky, they can put microphones right in front of dear leader's face, and he doesn't realize they're microphones. Oh, those inscrutable Ruskies. So that's what happened today. Dear leader sits down to lunch at the G8 summit, the final working lunch is what they call it. And you really do have to see the video. Because the video is so much more telling than the audio. Now I'm going to share the audio with you, and I'm not afraid to put. Listen, these are the words of the President of the United States, and if the President of the United States can, if I can't play his words, well, what does that say about freedom of the press and freedom of expression in the United States of America? But you got to see the video. I mean, it's bad enough that he talks like this to world leaders. I mean, you'll hear things. Hey, Blair, come here. He refers, and, you know, we've got a lot of listeners in the United Kingdom. And a lot of them don't like Tony Blair for obvious reasons. But it has got to be galling to hear the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom called to heel by George Bush, and called by his last name. Not Tony, not Mr. Blair, not Mr. Prime Minister. Hey, Blair, come here. What are you doing? Like some sort of poodle. Oh, wait. Yeah, okay. It's got to be embarrassing. Well, to my UK listeners, we're embarrassed too, because it just keeps getting worse. This is like some sort of surreal. I keep waiting to wake up from it, to be quite honest. This is just too crazy and you wake up and you go, whoa, and you realize you've been dreaming and you go back to sleep. But the nightmare doesn't end.
And God, we are so thoroughly embarrassed. So completely embarrassed. And more than anything else, embarrassed for... embarrassed of the media, too, because now George Bush said the word he said. There is no getting around it. And as what coverage it has gotten, it has been bleeped. I know, well, I got something here from NBC today. I got something from NBC. And I forget the bubblehead that's doing the stand-up on it. But they bleeped Bush's dirty word. But it's not just that. See if you can catch the other thing that maybe is under my fingernails right now. Go ahead, Agnes.
At the final working lunch today of the G8 summit,
yeah, Blair, what are you doing?
With cameras visible and microphones on from official Russian TV, not U.S. media, President Bush apparently not knowing he could be heard.
Russia's big and so is China.
Shared with Tony Blair his unvarnished opinion on how the current violence could end.
The irony is that what they need to do is get Syria to get Hezbollah to stop doing this and hold that.
Okay. So they bleeped it out. Now, I've got a question to ask, because I know that I heard it this afternoon. National Public Radio did not bleep out the four-letter brown word that Dear Leader used. And I know because of the sick, twisted, ugly little right-wing thugs that they are, that L. Brent Bozo the third and his cadre of right-wing nuts will be just, they'll fall on the FCC with a torrent of complaints about NPR playing that word. It was 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Children could have been listening and heard the brown word. The brown word must not be uttered on the public airwaves. Why, NPR has violated its public trust. Well, here's the question I ask of the rest of the so-called media in the United States. Why didn't you play it? Those are the words of the President of the United States of America. Or so we're told that he's president, that is. Those are his words. Those aren't some pundit's words. Those are the words of the President of the United States of America. And as such, they should be suitable for consumption by anyone in the world. Don't you think? And how will L. Brent Bozo III and his weird little minions, how will they characterize this? It's NPR's fault that we happen to have a chief executive in this country who doesn't have the common decency to use English language with any level of dignity? Oh, I know he butchers the language, but now that we find out that when he doesn't think the mic is on, he's got a sewer mouth. I can get through 3 hours a night of this program and not use the word that George Bush used today. And I do it 5 nights a week, and I don't use that word. What has become of the dignity of the office of the President of the United States of America? I ask you, what has become of... Well, we know what's become of it, because after all, this is the first man ever to occupy the White House who has brought convictions for two crimes with him to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Now, I want to shift gears for a moment, because we, in addition to the president's malaprops, we have to turn our attention to the misery that is being foisted upon the Levant, even as we speak. Civilian deaths have entered triple digits in the Middle East, in Lebanon. and we have a president who is standing idly by. We're joined by Congressman Nick Rahal. My congressman, I'm proud to say. Congressman Rahal, are you there?
Yes, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. You, sir?
Fine, thank you.
I really appreciate you coming on the show because I had a feeling you could offer perspective in what's going on in the Levant. We have a disengaged president, Congressman Rahal. What can we do about what's going on there?
Well, you're exactly right about that disengaged. If we look back to his first years in office, he thought President Clinton went too far in personal diplomacy. So George Bush went exactly the opposite and went for the first few years without doing anything as regards moving the peace process forward. I sent him a letter last Friday basically saying that I was in Beirut 24 years ago when the Israeli bombardment was aimed at ridding Lebanon of the PLO, and innocent civilians were losing their lives. And President Ronald Reagan got on the phone almost 24 years to this very day, as a matter of fact, and called then Prime Minister Begin and said, enough's enough. We'll negotiate our way out of this, which is what happened. And I've asked this president, I'm trying to find the letter here. I said to him in my letter last week that it's time for him to call the Prime Minister of Israel and say enough's enough. He's calling Arab leaders and asking them to use their influence on Hezbollah and Hamas, which is good. I give him credit for that. But why not include the one country we have influence over in the region, Israel?
That only seems reasonable to me, Congressman, not only because we have influence, but because, you know, by complaining about the deliberate, and I think they're deliberate. I mean, when you send a missile into an apartment complex, you've got to know beforehand that civilians are going to die.
Exactly.
But Friday evening, Congressman, I set a pox on both their houses.
Exactly. Hezbollah is stupid. I don't know what got into them to take this move, unless it was Iran pushing them because the games they're playing in the UN Security Council with their nuclear program, or what the motives are. It's hard to determine the motives. But it did give the Prime Minister of Israel, the new Prime Minister, who is rather virgin when it comes to warfare, having not been in the military as all previous Israeli prime ministers have been, it gives him a chance now to prove his mettle, to stand up and say, hey, I can be as tough as any war prime minister of Israel. And so it gives him a chance to do a little bravo. I hope Israel does not have designs on reoccupying Lebanon. That's a quagmire for them. They should have learned that after 18 years of such an occupation. But today they sent ground troops back into Lebanon. That's not a good sign.
No, it's not a good sign at all.
It's the bottom line here, Bob. It's time for cooler heads to prevail if we want to have any prayer for peace.
Well, when I saw the Lebanese prime minister openly weeping, my heart broke because, frankly, he has no ability to rein in Hezbollah.
No, he does not. And Hezbollah is trying to agitate Israel. There's no doubt about it. They want Israel to come back in and reoccupy Lebanon. They want Israel to continue along this path of tearing down the pro-democratic, pro-American government of Lebanon. Some year and a half in place now that we all had hope for after the Cedar Revolution.
Well, I seem to recall President Bush out there actively rah-rahing the Lebanese government. Was I mistaken?
No, you were not mistaken. He has mentioned some words. He doesn't want to see the Israelis hurt the Sinora government. That's the prime minister of Lebanon, Sinora. But you know, he can do a little more than just give that little mouthy action. And the actions of today, the turmoil of today, is hurting the moderate Palestinian government of Prime Minister Abbas in West Bank and Gaza. That's the goal of the radical left, the Iranians and Syrians and the Hamas and Hezbollah, is to wreck the middle ground.
Well, it seems
there's any where there might be a chance for peace.
Well, Congressman Rahal, it seems like every time we disengage, something like this happens. I'm reminded of July of 1990, when a cable went out from then Secretary of State James Baker III. who said to Saddam Hussein, "We have no opinion on your border disagreement with Kuwait. The issue is not associated with America." And I don't think you can have any greater disengagement than that. And the next thing you know, tanks are rolling into Kuwait City. And we got a war, and we lost American lives. We got Gulf War syndrome out of it. I'll do the real hardcore stuff, Congressman, and say that. But this administration and these Republicans seem, by their unwillingness to engage, it seems like almost that there is a greater, that there's a further goal out there, that they somehow, that this is good for them. I mean,
remember Dick Cheney's speeches about when we were going to overthrow Saddam, how that would further the Palestinian peace process? Well, even President Bush said that. How when we get rid of Saddam Hussein, we'll get rid of the suicide bombers, we'll get rid of those who back the terrorists.
Oh, I remember it well. And what scares me to death, Congressman.
I don't think so.
No, what scares me to death is that this Republican White House is playing checkers while Syria and Hezbollah and Hamas and Iran are all playing chess.
Oh, you're exactly right.
Because
blame Iran for wanting to develop the nuclear bomb. They want to be treated like North Korea is treated.
Right, because he won't mess with North Korea.
No.
And that seems to be the lesson that has been taught here.
Well, it's that type of pick and choose and that type of potato couch diplomacy is sit back and just watch, and the type of lip service diplomacy that's given to pro-democracy, pro-reform.
Exactly.
It's one of the ingredients causing the turmoil today. There's just no question about it. You have to be careful what you wish for.
Well, I'm scared to death, Congressman, to be quite honest, and maybe at this point in time this is where I turn into a paranoid lunatic. But I am scared to death that there are factions out there, both within the White House and across the ocean, that think if they can just sit back and let this get nasty enough, that it will conveniently afford the Bush administration the opportunity to loose the hounds of war upon Iran.
Oh yeah,
that's
exactly a fear that I have, Bob, because all the neocons are having a field day as we speak. They're salivating over the build up in world opinion, even some Arab governments, and legitimately so, they ought to be criticizing Hezbollah as they have. I haven't said it yet on this program. I'm not condoning a thing Hezbollah has done or Hamas has done. Matter of fact, I've condemned them. I condemned them in the letter to the president.
Right, as they should be.
Stupid. And it does. It plays right in the hands of the neocons who would love to see a third war front for the United States.
And I have a feeling that some of our so-called enemies would like to see that third front, too, because history teaches us that even huge military powers are hard-pressed to succeed by themselves in a multiple-front war.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And Israel cannot take on a third front. They're already with battling Hamas in Gaza and Hezbollah in Lebanon, and it's unlikely, and this is where Syria and Iran obtain their gutsiness these days. It's unlikely Israel is going to bomb either of those countries, especially when they have the little helpless country of Lebanon as a chessboard.
Yeah, I don't know how many people realize that
play their games.
The Lebanese army is only 70,000 strong.
That's correct.
And it is made up of a combination of what used to, once upon a time, was Walid Jumblatt's Druze militia, and Hezbollah, and Shia, and Sunni, and they're all thrown together
and
in this. Right.
Yes.
And should Lebanon take action against Hezbollah, there's every likelihood in the world, is there not, that army will just splinter into factions again and welcome back to the civil war.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Well,
Congressman, a war of epidemic proportions.
If you and I can figure this out in a conversation on a little radio show, Why cannot a White House with that purports to have absolute public policy and strategic geniuses, why can't they figure it out?
Well, that's a good question, Bob. It's a sad question to have to ask, but it's right to the point. They just don't have the wherewithal. They don't have the will, I should say. The will.
Well, what bothers me, I think, most is the like I said, the disengagement. And, of course, we have been beaten over the head for the last 6 years with pronouncements on what a follower of Jesus Christ George Bush is. And, frankly, I was talking with some of my colleagues on another one of the programs on our network Saturday evening, and I said, you know, if you're a student of the teachings of Christ, then you find out that with the advent of grace, the concept that the sins of the fathers would be visited upon the sons was done away with. And yet that is what we're watching happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I need that. Well, is there any congressional action that can be taken? You wrote that very well-worded letter that reminded George Bush about Ronald Reagan's the phone call to Menachem Begin. Is there any possibility of raising a bit of a hue and cry along those lines in the halls of Congress?
Well, unfortunately, I can raise it, which I have already. But there's less of a willingness or the courage from this body, quite honestly, than there is down at the White House. There will be resolutions going through here in the next couple of days, well, one of which I've even helped word because I think it's a more middle-of-the-road, which condemns Hezbollah for what they've done, but it also says that there should be respect for innocent loss of life and civilian infrastructure, etc. And there'll probably be one others going through this body that will be so one-sided, so lopsided as to make it appear that any action taken, it doesn't matter what action taken by the Israelis, we're going to say yes, go for it, without even knowing ahead of time what it may be.
Just handing,
and
just
that's
handing,
not in America's best interest at all.
Just handing them by way of a congressional resolution, handing a blank check.
Exactly, and that's not in America's best interest to give any country that type of a blank check, that type of pat on the back to go do whatever you want before we even know what you're doing.
All of this so grieves me, Congressman. I've gone back and reread my history. I went back and reread a history of the Crusades, and it reads what happened 1,000 years ago reads like news reports from today. Attacks on Acre, attacks on Haifa, attacks on Tyre, on Sidon, on Citadel Fortress that became Beirut. 1,000 years. 1,000 years, and it seems that we are not just on the path of, but bent on repeating the same tragic mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I hope you can help cooler heads to prevail. Is there anything that people can be watching for, or perhaps go to Thomas and keep an eye out for, and urge their congressman in their districts to get aboard?
Well, the best thing would be just to pray for a ceasefire and that all parties be urged to cool it right now. You know, in these past cycles of violence, the Israelis, of course, say, no, we're not going to negotiate. We're not going to have a prisoner exchange. They hold hundreds of Lebanese and Palestinian prisoners. Many of whom don't have the first drop of blood on their hand, but you know,
haven't been tried, haven't been charged, a little
exactly.
Like Guantanamo.
Exactly. And you know, it ends up there are negotiations. Now, Hezbollah perhaps they were wrong. Yeah, they struck out first in this particular cycle of violence. And they were wrong in what they did. But I guess the best way out right now is to give back the Israeli soldiers and then know that with international help, with U.S. pressure, I would hope that there will be some exchanges in the future. May not be exact quid pro quo today. You follow me?
Yes, I do. And
there, unwritten understanding that down the road there'll be some Lebanese Palestinian prisoners released that don't have blood on their hands.
And it shouldn't be too difficult to determine that.
No.
And then the slow, sad repetition of the rebuilding of Beirut begins anew. I can't help recalling that for many years Beirut was referred to as the Paris of the Levant.
Yes. That's exactly right, Bob.
And
it was destroyed, then rebuilt, and now it's back to being destroyed again.
Well, Congressman, I wish you the very best in your efforts, and I thank you very kindly for joining me for this conversation and for sharing your wisdom and your observances with our audience here at the Head On Radio Network.
Thank you, Bob.
It's been a real pleasure.
Enjoyed being with you.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye now.
Take care.
My Congressman, Nick Rahal, a man that I'm right now mighty proud to have as my congressman. Because in this time, it takes a lot of courage to do what Congressman Rahal is doing and to stand up and say, make it stop, when an entire executive branch of the government is bent on negligence and letting it continue. I am proud of Nick Rahal right now. I'm always proud of Nick. Congressman Rahal does a wonderful job. There's a reason he's been in office as long as he has here. And he's engaged, and he is committed. And he has a perspective that virtually no one else in that body has. For you see, Lebanon is his ancestral home. His people, like many people in southern West Virginia, found their way from Lebanon to the United States in the century before last and built new lives here. But just as with anyone who knows what their patrimony is, their heart aches when the old homeland bleeds. Let's take a break and come back to your phone calls. The phone number is 877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network. I am Bob Kincaid.
If you or someone close to you has a hearing loss, here is some great news. Thousands of Open Caption videos are yours to borrow, and it's all free. Open Caption videos make it possible for the hearing impaired to understand television. The Caption Media Program offers classic Hollywood movies, special interest, and educational videos. Visit us online at cfv.org or call 1-800-237-6213. You can register to be a user and make your selections from our online or printed catalog. It's just that easy, and we'll even pay for the postage. Open Caption videos are perfect for the classroom, your home, or even the workplace. The nonprofit Caption Media Program is funded by the U.S. Department of Education and administered by the National Association of the Deaf. Tell a family member or a friend about the Caption Media Program today. Bookmark cfv.org for free loan Open Caption videos or call 1-800-237-6213.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to IRS.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's IRS.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484. 4484.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Roland was a warrior from the land of the midnight sun, with a Thompson gun for hire, fighting to be done. The deal was made in Denmark on a dark and stormy day.
If I haven't said it yet, let me thank you for joining us and spending time with us this evening. Because, above all, it's when we have the opportunity to join together and engage in dialogue, whether it be on the telephone or via email to bob@headonradio.com or in the chat room, headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. This is the kind of dialogue that can make a difference in this country. Please contact your congressperson and... Unless they're like a neocon right-wing Republican. Contact them, too, and let them know that there is no such thing as the solidly neocon America. The hard little cancerous knot of bloodthirsty war lovers who support George Bush is down to about 20% or so. And as I was noting in an email exchange with our new good friend Gail, those people have to be marginalized. There's no talking to them. There's no dialoguing with them. You want to get rid of the religious right in the United States? Let me tell you how. Get more people out to vote, because the more people that come out on our side, the more progressives who are enabled, the smaller that percentage becomes. Let's go to the phones. I've kept Andy waiting for a long time, calling from the UK. I'm sorry, Andy, but welcome to the program.
Hey, that's okay. I'm doing all right.
Doing okay. How about you?
Yeah, it's not too bad. We're in the middle of a heat wave over here. What do you guys like for weather?
We're crossing up into the mid 90s.
Right. What's that in real numbers?
You know, maybe what, 32 or so Celsius?
Yeah, I think we've got up to about 34 here. As long as you don't go out in the sun. Good for tomatoes, anyway.
Yeah, it's brutal. Shame on me. Someday I have to actually learn to do the Celsius scale in my head like I could back in my old chemistry days.
Well, I used to be able to do it as well, and my old days are a lot closer than yours were, so I don't blame you.
Well, I gotta find out, Andy.
Mm-hmm.
How does it feel and we, like I said, we know Tony Blair, not so much. But still, to have the Prime Minister of the UK call, hey, Blair, what are you doing?
Yeah, well...
Does that stick in your craw just a little bitty bit?
It does. Not so much as it would if he actually had a spine. And I mean, we watched the whole uncut thing on Newsnight. Everybody should go to BBC/Newsnight. You can find it. And watch the video from there, because there was quite a lot on Lebanon, also sort of on their bit, their undisclosed lip. And yeah, the way he called him, hey Blair, it just looked like he obviously has no respect at all for Tone, which, well, to be honest, I don't blame Bush for having no respect for Tone.
Blair kind of let this happen to himself, didn't he?
Well, he has, yeah. I mean, he's a worm. That's what he's done to himself. But then, of course, there was the bit where he went on and did the wonderful word that's not good enough for anybody else, apparently. And the look on Tony Blair's face is like, I've just spent 10 minutes trying to explain what's going on to you, and you've ignored all of it, and now I have to nod, smile, and agree.
Well, what amazed me in watching the video, Andy, it was Blair who pulled Bush's bacon out of the fire by just reaching across. You know, when Dear Leader was sitting there chomping on that muffin or whatever, with his mouth open like he'd never, like he'd never learned any manners at the table whatsoever, sprawled out, it just looked horrible. And it was Tony Blair who leaned over and turned the microphone off.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's obviously somebody in Russia who's seems to slip the money every time these sort of things go on, to leave the microphones on to see if anything embarrassing comes out, which I applaud, actually, frankly. anything that lets us know what these people are truly like. But,
Well, where's the religious right going to be now? I can't wait. Well, it'll be crickets time. I mean, it'll not be just chirping crickets, that's all. Because, their dear leader is, George Bush, he's a godly man. He wouldn't say that word if he had a mouthful of it. It's got to be a liberal plot.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, they'll be saying it to people with a couple of bits of sound software writing it up. They'll always come up with some excuse not to believe what they want to believe. I mean, that's the problem with people who believe rather than people who have ideas, because it's very difficult to change beliefs. It's far easier to just go, no, I know what I believe. It doesn't have to be right. It just has to be what you believe.
Well, that's the dangerous thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
See, I got to thinking about that. I think it was either last night or this morning. What it boils down to is whenever you hear a neocon or a Republican say, we know, then what you must understand they really mean is, we believe.
And what they really mean is, we made up.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, I mean, what can you do? Let's move on to the world politics thing.
Yes, do please.
The Lebanon thing's obviously what we're going to talk about. I mean, I hate to disagree with your congressman, but I'm going to have to. Because it's not Iran or Syria that are doing this, that started Hezbollah off with their kidnap mission. Neither of them are interested in kicking this off right now. I mean, if Iran were interested in kicking off a war with America, they wouldn't do it through Hezbollah and Israel. They'd simply let the Shias loose on the American soldiers in Iraq. And it doesn't serve their interest to have Israel all touchy and missiles pointing at everyone. Syria, apparently, to all accounts, are staying well out of this. Yes, Iran and Syria fund Hezbollah and Hamas and other organizations. But no, it's not actually what they want to do. The reason this kicked off is because of Israel and America. Because Israel and America have been pressuring the Lebanese government for so long now about disarming Hezbollah, like that was ever going to be.
Well, and of course there's, what is it, UN Resolution 1559, Andy?
Well, no, I mean, starting six, well, yeah, I mean, that's supposed to be enforced. That was when Israel withdrew, that got drawn up, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, five and a half months ago, the Lebanese government started having meetings about how to disarm Hezbollah. And then after 5 months of planning, Hezbollah spring this operation on capturing Israelis. It was getting to the point where they were going to start talking seriously to the Hezbollah members of government about disbanding Hezbollah. And that's why they did this thing, because, of course, all they need to do is get Israel to react.
Yeah, just poke them with a sharp stick, and you can predict the reaction.
Well, yeah, because Israel always overreacts, just insanely. I mean, you know, what do they need to do? Oh, we've had a couple of soldiers, like, taken. Send in the spies, find out where they are, send in the special forces, get them out, kill anyone that you can identify was to do with it that was in that building at the time, and then leave. That's all they needed.
And frankly, that would have served notice to Hezbollah.
Watch it, we can do this.
Yeah.
Rather than just, we're going to inflame the entire area by getting...
This is swatting flies with sledgehammers.
Well, it's kind of worse than that, Bob. I mean, this is swatting flies by taking the entire building out.
Well, yeah.
So that's exactly what it is, because Hezbollah have about 10,000 warriors inside Lebanon. 10,000. The Israeli army, without calling up the reserves, is about 170,000. It's not Hezbollah standing up saying...
There's another thing in the Israeli end of this that is very disturbing to me, Andy. Mm-hmm. A former defense minister or some high-ranking Israeli government official who told National Public Radio this evening, look, we've known they had these missiles. We've known they had these missiles and these rockets for years.
Mm.
And we deliberately chose not to do anything about it.
Well, you know that Hezbollah aren't claiming that they've been attacking Haifa, don't you?
Yeah.
And if I was Hezbollah and I'd launched rockets successfully into Haifa and killed Israeli citizens, I would be screaming it from the rooftops across the entire Middle East. Because I'd be going, ha ha ha, we can hit Israel in their city. And they haven't. And there's no evidence that Hezbollah have these longer-range rockets. We know they have Katyushas, but Katyushas are 10 a penny in the Middle East.
Well, Katyushas are bottle rockets.
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, they've been around since World War II, haven't they? So I'm not even convinced that Hezbollah hit Haifa or the Israeli ships or any of that. I wouldn't put it past America or Israel to put those missiles into the Israeli cities just to make sure they keep the blood pumping, as it were.
That's, you know, that is an absolutely sickening prospect, Andy.
Well, the problem is, you know, your congressman wouldn't know. The senators in the defense committee wouldn't know. The president wouldn't know. Because it wouldn't be done by anybody who had any kind of connection to officialdom. It's done by what's called the security state, who exists purely to serve their own interests pretty much nowadays.
No, that is truly frightening.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, you know, Death Squad John, he's one of these fixers. People like him are in positions, and, of course, he's the one who's most prominent, so he's now kept as a look what John's doing, while other people who are more efficient and effective and quieter do what they need to do. People are assassinated around the world. You know, bombs go off, car bombs explode.
Just like Central America during the Reagan administration, yeah. Nuns are dragged out in the middle of the night and raped and killed.
Well, yeah, that's it. I mean, you know, there's nothing new for the CIA to get its hands dirty. And the CIA and Lebanon have got a long history.
Well, without a doubt. Without a doubt. You know, and we've gone, we've come a long way and made no progress at all. How many Americans were kidnapped and eventually killed in Lebanon?
Oh, I don't know.
Some were released, some were killed.
But, I mean, ultimately, it always comes down to we look at the Western hostages and a few Israelis get killed. I mean, look at the parity on TV. Over here, with our so-called illustrious and independent BBC, we've had four Israeli citizens have been killed, five Israeli citizens have been killed, and 15 minutes of the half-hour news slot is Israeli citizens have been killed. And then a 30-second add-on, the death toll in Lebanon's up to 76 now.
I know. Well, there is an inherent devaluation of Lebanese life.
Yeah.
And one could argue that, well, look, Andy, at least they're counting the civilian dead in Lebanon.
My government
will not account for the civilian Arabic and Christian dead in Iraq.
I know.
And
your government's currently controlled by a bunch of sickos who think war's a game.
Yeah. Well, I mean...
profit above all else.
Bless his heart, my father fell nodded off for a nap earlier this afternoon. Mm-hmm. with he had been channel surfing, and I think he nodded off just as he was passing Fox News. And I heard some report from some Fox News reporter from Israel, and this is exactly what you were talking about, because the Fox News reporter said Israeli civilians are scattering like sparrows. I kid you not. Scattering like sparrows.
I'm not surprised. Their lust for the poetic just doesn't surprise me at all anymore on Fox. They really do like to have that. I don't know, I'm thinking the back of a book cover, sort of that sort of rhyming couplets of praise thing. That's how they like to present their news, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to find something, it's got to be soft and delicate, or, you know, and obviously if it was a bunch of Arabs dying, it'd be, oh, look at these ignorant peasants running when they should.
Well, you know, those civilians had to die, Bill, because after all, Hezbollah is ruthless and has no morals or ethics, and they set up operations inside these civilian apartment buildings, so Israel is therefore compelled to kill civilians.
Damn, did you used to have a job for Fox?
Sorry, no. CNN, yeah. But I mean, I know how it works. I know the game. But the thing, Andy, is to try to alert. You know, it's maybe not so bad in your country, but it is bad here.
Mm.
And we have to call it when we see it. Like the clip I played from NBC News, where the bubblehead said, George Bush's unvarnished words.
Yeah.
Those weren't unvarnished words. Those were profane words.
Yeah, unvarnished is when George Galloway's just got up and hasn't had time to think. That's unvarnished English, like normal English. Varnished
right.
English is George Galloway in full flow.
Yeah, unvarnished English is Harry Truman. That's our paradigm in this country.
Yeah. Well,
but that wasn't unvarnished. That was just dirty.
No, well, I mean, you know, what's good enough for him is good enough for the real president, for Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney, remember what he told somebody to go do for themselves?
Oh, yeah, Pat Leahy.
Another wonderful four-letter word. I mean, these people just don't give a damn. I mean, they've never had to watch their language because they never come into contact with people from the press in their CEO positions. They have gibbies that do the PR. And so the boardroom types, they you know, I mean, we have this image of these guys in suits and you think they're not profane? Of course they're profane. They talk about us in far more derogatory terms than any builder on any building site will talk about any woman. And of course we're just the proles to them. And that's exactly how Dick Cheney and George Bush believe. And of course Tony Blair, to George Bush, Tony Blair is one of those, he's an aspirant class. He wants to be one of us, but he's obviously not rich enough.
Well, I wonder, I just wonder, Andy, at what point does Tony Blair have a tipping point? Does Tony Blair have a point of dignity where he says enough is enough?
No. Tony Blair is a Thatcherite little scummy worm, like, I don't know, I can't even... it's insulting to worms and scum, because we all came from scum, and I really don't want to admit any kind of genetic link to Tony Blair, if I can possibly avoid it, because he has absolutely nothing about him that counts as moral character. Nothing. I mean, he's a Thatcher.
Well, I mean, here's Tony Blair working his... I mean, if we treat him with any kind of credit whatsoever, here's Tony Blair working his butt off, engaging Kofi Annan, trying to set up something to make this end.
Well, he needs... Well, Tony Blair's desperate for good things, so you can understand why he'll try. I mean, he needs good news. He needs good PR, because basically he's getting lynched slowly at home. And, I mean, it's basically now a matter of time until Gordon Brown goes, about my turn now. And then it's all over. So he needs something good. And this would be great. Peace in the Middle East. My goodness, what a time to bow out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but George Bush comes along and in this off-the-cuff commentary to Tony Blair completely dismisses everything that he's just done trying to engage Kofi Annan.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was totally apparent from that clip that Bush wasn't even listening. You know, Tony was kind of trying to put across what he was on about trying, and Bush was yeah, it's all Syria's fault, let's bomb Syria, which is obviously what Dick Cheney programmed him with earlier. You know,
I think it was Saul Bellow in an editorial a couple of years back who referred to dear leader George Bush as, and he meant this in utterly damning fashion, as incurious. It was the nastiest thing that he said about him, and the way it was written, it was. He is incurious. Can you imagine? We talk about these things on this program, Andy, and it means something to us.
Yeah.
And we are curious. And we would, if any of us, if our nation called upon us to try to do something about this, we would do everything in our power to make the right decision.
Well, I mean, like you were saying the other day, like other people have been saying, the right decision with Israel and Lebanon and Palestine and everyone in that area is to sit down and go, right, everybody leave the ghost man at the door. Nobody has a prior right to any land anywhere on the earth. And
yeah, you can only bring God into the discussion if you can bring him to the discussion.
Yeah, if you show him, like, physically, then we'll accept it. Otherwise, until then, we have to rely on logic and common sense. And, you know, it would take all of 5 minutes to sort this out, if we really wanted to. But Israel doesn't want to, because the people... this is the problem. We say Israel, we say America, we say Britain. None of this is real. The people of Israel, the people of America, and the people of Britain want everyone to stop killing each other and shut up at least. You know, I mean, that's what everyone wants. If you can't do anything else, just leave us alone in peace. Now, of course, it all comes down to the moneyed interest. So I hate to keep coming back to this, but it is all down to the moneyed interest. Why do we support Israel as America and Britain?
Because we make a buck on it.
Bingo. We sell them tons of weapons.
Well, those, I mean, you know, the delivery systems for a lot of those bombs that have blown up a lot of those civilians have fallen off of F-16s made right here in the U.S. of A.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And those great big howitzers, you see them hammering away with the Israeli crews all standing outside with their hands over their ears. Well, they were made in America as well.
The helicopters, yeah, I mean...
Of course, this is, you know, the money, these things are subsidized by the taxpayer. So you guys lose your money to rich people in your country so that rich people in Israel can make a buck off the rich people in your country. And, of course, the rich people in my country try and squeeze a few cents out here and there wherever they can.
And the change in the transaction is done in blood.
Absolutely. But it's okay, because it's our blood, Bob. It's not theirs.
Dear God. Andy, we've got a roll. It's so good to hear from you.
You too, man.
Thank you for your perspective. Will do. Have a good day. Bye now. Our UK correspondent, Andy, in Wales. A man of much common sense. The news is coming. Gosh, I think there's one phone line left if you want to get involved. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. What this is our little dust-up. We call it Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. Living in Beirut have begun evacuating with at least 64 American citizens flown by helicopter to the nearby islands of Cyprus. France and Italy have also begun evacuations on a Greek cruise liner. Tomorrow, a cruise ship chartered by the U.S. government is expected to ferry over some of the approximately 25,000 Americans still in Lebanon. As the conflict entered its second day, Hezbollah rockets struck the Israeli city of Haifa, and more than 40 people were killed in Israeli strikes into Lebanon. Lebanese officials say more than 200 of its citizens have been killed since Wednesday, while Israel reports at least 24 Israeli deaths. At the UN, a delegation will be deployed to Beirut to try to resolve the escalating conflict. The delegation chief says the Lebanese government should play a role in the process, but some fear that could lead to the breakup of the Lebanese military and possibly lead to civil war. In St. Petersburg, Russia today, the G8 summit of world leaders concluded. The escalating Middle East crisis took center stage. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is expected to travel there soon. Near Baghdad today, at least 50 people were killed and 90 wounded when gunmen attacked an open-air market. An Iraqi television station reports that most of the victims were Shiites. Also today, the U.S. military reported that 3 U.S. soldiers were killed. In southern Afghanistan, the Taliban has reportedly taken control of 2 towns. Officials are still trying to confirm those reports. Meanwhile, a British official says thousands of British soldiers are being deployed to the area to take over control from U.S. forces. At the UN, world powers have agreed to send the Iranian nuclear issue back to the Security Council. Tehran could be punished for refusing to seriously negotiate over the program. Debate on the issue could begin next week. In Washington, senators have begun debating whether to use federal funding for stem cell research. It's expected to pass tomorrow, but the bill faces an immediate veto threat from President Bush. In Southern California, stormy weather has forced firefighters to retreat from the area where they've been fighting a series of wildfires. Nearly 60 homes have so far been destroyed and more than 130 square miles burned. One person has so far been killed and 11 firefighters injured. Americans across the country are suffering through a heat wave. Many areas are calling for residents to conserve energy during peak daytime hours.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Industrial production rose 0.8% in June. The Federal Reserve says that reflects more manufacturing, mining, and auto production activity. Executives from GM and Renault Nissan say they will explore the possibility of joining forces over the next 90 days. But Business Week Online reports that Toyota may try to block that deal by forming its own alliance with GM. A Ford executive says the company plans to invest nearly $2 billion in Britain to develop hybrid cars. The company hopes to produce a 70-mile-per-gallon Focus model. New technology from HP will allow users to store large amounts of information, including video, sounds, and text. The tiny radio chips can reportedly be attached to almost any object and accessed by a handheld electronic reader. The U.S. government has awarded IBM a $17 million contract. The funds will be used to provide Internet services to the Defense Department. McDonald's is reporting strong second-quarter earnings. The fast food company credits higher sales of its breakfast foods and strong European demand. CBS will advertise its fall TV lineup in a new place, Fresh Eggs. Corporate logos and catchphrases will reportedly be stamped on various egg brands starting in September. Light sweet crude settled at $75.30 today. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 8 points at 10,747. NASDAQ flat, S&P 500 down 2. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Let's do another hour. What do you say? I'm Bob. This is Head On. So much to talk about. So much to consider. So much to cuss and discuss. Our good friend Sue on Big Coal River writes in the subject line, Bush is embarrassing. She says, something else I found embarrassing for our country. Did Barbara not teach him table manners? There he sat with foreign dignitaries, chewing with his mouth open and talking to people while chewing his food. Disgusting. But it's something you've got to come to grips with about the Bush family. I saw it said or somewhere that, it's not all the Bushes. I mean, like Prescott had a lot of dignity, you know? Prescott Bush, dear leader's grandfather, dug up the bones of Geronimo, a man whom he would not have been fit to be around in life. Of course, Prescott also played a little footsie with Fritz Tyson and the Nazis. So, you know, no, it's not necessarily all about knowing which fork to use. But, the whole family's just a sleazy bunch of no-good, uber-rich welfare saps. A lot of the money got started in the First World War, when the Bush family found themselves, or some Walker or Prescott or God knows one of the tentacles of that giant, malevolent, antediluvian beast that is the Bush family. They made their money by getting their fingers in the wartime materiels pie, and from the First World War forward, they realized that that's where the money was to be had. It wasn't in producing goods or services or doing anything for humanity. It was all, every bit of it, in sucking money out off the taxpayer teat. So, you know, before you start thinking about, no, they're not, no. They're tasteless, they're classless, they're dueless, and they're worthless. They're Bushes. Let's go to the phones because our good friend Laura in Michigan has been waiting and waiting and waiting. Laura, welcome aboard. I'm sorry you had to wait.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Well, you know what? I'm pretty disgusted.
Did I do something?
No, but did you watch Meet the Press yesterday?
I saw excerpts. You talking about the Newt Gingrich thing?
Well, let me tell you. I can't understand why we're so upset with Bush having a potty mouth when everybody else is calling in saying we're in World War III.
Yeah, it doesn't get much dirtier than that, does it?
Well, you know, here yesterday on Meet the Press, we had the two presidential hopefuls for 2008. Joe, I just decided I want to be president really bad, Biden, and Newt. I look like young Frankenstein Gingrich, because if you look at him,
yeah,
he
does
a square head.
Yeah, yeah,
you know.
Yeah, the collar comes
like
up.
His mother was raped by Frankenstein, and she had frogs somewhere in her ancestry.
Yeah, the collar of his shirt comes up just high enough to cover the bolts, Laura.
Yeah. Anyway, when he brought up World War III, I'm going, oh my God, because you know, he's really way back in the beginning of the neocons. He pretty much wrote the book. And then I was upset by that. But then today I tuned into Flush Flumball, and there he was putting it all out there, World War III. And I'm telling you, if Rush is saying World War III, and he said, oh, we're the greatest world power on this planet, and where aren't we right there? We don't need to send soldiers. We can just bomb Iran, and we probably don't have to worry about Syria. And he even went so far as to start to say atomic bomb. And I'll tell you, it sent chills through me, Bob.
Well, you see,
when you got Rush talking about it, he's got the playbook, and this is what they're going for. Remember a year ago when we were told by Mr. Hirsch, that they wanted to go into Iran. I think it's Hirsch, right?
Yeah, Seymour Hirsch,
yes,
the New Yorker.
I think of his first name. That they wanted to go into Iran, and they couldn't figure out how they were going to do it. You know, everybody else was trying to figure out how, when, why. And then they said they were going to do it in June, and that whole year went by, and we thought, well, maybe they met this June. And now, here we are. It's coming near the middle, it's in the, going towards the end of July, and now we got people beating the bushes, that's not a good term, but saying, Iran and Syria and Hezbollah, and nobody even puts Al-Qaeda in any of those sentences. Neither Rush, Gingrich.
No. Well, see, but Laura, their whole gig all along has been a matter of waiting for the next world war. It used to be fashionable to in neocon circles to refer to the Cold War as World War III, hoping we could get it stirred up with the Russians.
Right.
But, you know, that came and went, and so now the new paradigm is to call terrorism World War III. It's the new World War III. And that's and what Gingrich did was nothing more or less than the natural extension of that kind of bloodthirsty thinking. Because, among other things, Gingrich is hanging back in the pack right now, but he still maintains sincere hopes that he will that he's going to run against George Allen from Virginia and Bill Frist and John McCain. For his party's presidential nomination.
Oh, right. He can taste it. He's pretty much sure that they've pretty much John McCain is gone out of the running. You know, they've dirtied him quite a bit. You know, with the religious right. I don't think he's gonna stand a chance in hell.
Well, he's the Republican front runner right now, Laura.
Yeah, but. Anyway, Gingrich thinks he can do it. You know, he's been appearing everywhere. And then on the other side of it, so is Biden. And, you know, I used to like Joe Biden quite a bit, but lately I've seen his true colors, too.
Yeah.
And he's no different than any other dino.
Well, you know, it was kind of interesting. There was a Joe Lieberman campaign event at an Irish pub in Stamford, Connecticut, in the last few days over the weekend. And Joe Biden had previously promised, oh, I'm going to get out and I'm going to campaign for my good friend, my fellow senator, Joe Lieberman. The news report said he forgot to get on his train.
Yeah.
Biden did.
He doesn't want, you know, he wants to be president. And everything he's going to do from here on out, like he even went on Bill Maher's show a while back. You know, and all of a sudden he shows up. Oh, he wants to be president really bad. So he's been campaigning, and everything he does from here on out is a campaign.
Oh, I believe so.
You know.
Well, I mean, a camera light can't... See, he's like the opposite of George Bush. He sees a camera light, and he sees a microphone, and he gets in front of it.
Yeah.
he's hypersensitive to them, whereas Dear Leader is just so oblivious in his little world. You know, calling the Prime Minister of Great Britain Blair... By his last name, that's indicative of the place where George Bush's social and cultural and moral and ethical development ended,
well,
and that is at Andover Prep School, because everybody there, you know, they talk with their teeth clenched and they call each other by their last name. Oh, Bush, come here, you know.
And Bob, the new Republican thing is now forget about Iraq as soon as you can. And that's why they're doing this World War III on Iran, Syria, and this is the new devil. And I was listening to Randy Rose, and she was talking about what the debt general was saying. He couldn't even come out and say that they were winning in Iraq. He said, here's how I'll put it, we're not losing.
Well, see, what you'll see next, with the extension of the World War III paradigm, Laura, what you can expect to hear now is, well, you know, in World War II, we had a lot of setbacks. I mean, there was Guadalcanal, and Iraq is kind of like our Guadalcanal, but we came back from that, and we won World War II. This, Iraq is a setback in the greater war on terror. I kid you not. I haven't read that before. I haven't seen it somewhere.
I know.
But it wouldn't surprise me in the least to see it come out that way.
I know. You're right.
And because these people are insane.
But this is like, it's the new horror story. You know, just when you think it can't get any worse, there we go. And I remember I was listening to some other show, and the guy on it was kind of like a mystic or a seer, and he was talking about sometime in the fall, everybody get all your canned goods, all your candles and everything ready, because something might be happening that could even affect the power grids in our country. And you know what? I think that guy might be right.
He may very well.
Sure, I've got all my stores fixed up and all my candles. Who knows?
Well, it's hard. It's an uncertain and scary world, and they intend to make it scarier. Laura, we've got to roll on.
Okay.
So good to hear from you. Have a wonderful evening.
Oh, you too, Bob. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure. Take
Bye.
Care.
Bye.
Our good friend Laura from Michigan. And we've got a break coming up. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Hello?
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
This is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me for a brand new show here on the Horn, the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Tune in Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
The president came out and talked about the Iraq war and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
the hour as we work through this, my favorite night of the week. Everybody dance. Let's go straight to the phones if you can take off the dancing shoes for a minute there, Agnes. And David is with us from Middle Tennessee. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. What a great show.
Thank you.
But I've heard enough about Bush. Let's talk about football.
Yes, by all means.
All right, give me a minute and I'll hang myself, and it might even be amusing.
Okay.
There's a basic concept in football that you run a play on offense until the defense stops it.
Yeah, oh yeah. Bryant made a career out of that.
Hold on to that thought for a second. And in basic trick play football, there's the old tackle eligible. You know, a number 68 walks up to the referee and says, "Hi, I'm going to catch a pass on the next play if the team ain't paying attention, ref." And he goes, "Gotcha, Slutkowski. I'll take care of it for you." George Bush, Condoleezza Rice, none of them are paying attention. Did I just hear you say, this is a little detail I hadn't caught up on, did Prime Minister Blair lean over to George and say, "Excuse me for a moment, Mr. President, I'll help you pull your pants up and turn the mic off"?
Yeah, I mean, you can see it. You can see it on the video. He reaches over. He gets this sort of blood drained out of the face look on him.
Oh, I'm sure.
And leans across from left to right across the front of the body of Deer Leader, and just click, and the audio goes away.
So you're a broadcasting professional. George W. Bush is the leader of the free world. Condoleezza Rice has the most important cabinet post in the United States government, and only one of you, knowing that the world hangs on every stinking word you say, one of you knew enough not to say.
Well, see, I got this button where if I want to say, "Gur,"
yep,
I can make it not happen.
My father was in broadcasting for 45 stinking years. I can tell you open mic stories that you will break ribs laughing at. And here this poor chimpanzee and this woman that has a, you know, Imelda's got a closet full of shoes, just like Condoleezza, and she doesn't know enough to look around at the button. What do we got for leaders? You know, seriously. All right, now then, I've run my little giggle. Seriously, there's only one reason for stupidity like this. When you're under pressure, and it really matters, the greatest way to make sure you perform badly is to know you're in over your head and you're stupid, and therefore you're frightened. Every person at the top of the Bush administration is scared to death because they know they are just inches away from the American people, the 80% of us, not the 20% authoritarian-worshipping neocon religious wing nut. Yeah, all right.
Gas bags.
Thank you.
I'm always good for at least one there, dude.
Inches away from realizing they're idiots and they have made a mess of our country and the world. World War III is right around the corner. Not according to Rush Limbaugh. But
yeah, and since September the 12th, 2001, they're all walking around with, you know, they're all Ernest T. Bass, you know, all stupid, all mean, with the chip on their shoulder. Knock it off.
Yep. Potato in the pants, mission accomplished.
But it is. They're mean. You know, there's a reason that I from time to time referred to him as being pig-eyed. Because that sort of squinty little not sure what's it, just, you know, snout to the ground, uncertain, scared, and, you know, mean. That's them.
And the reason they're scared, they're schoolyard bullies, and they know it, and they're very much afraid that the American people are going to finally wake up and act like that one guy in every grade school. In any southern school I knew anything about, there was this one guy that was in three fights in 16 years of public school.
I was him.
You were that guy? No, I'm talking about the one guy that nobody wanted to see get mad because he was never mad before. But when he did get mad, the bully didn't stand a chance. Three kids that thought they were tough didn't stand a chance.
I remember very well a day in eighth grade. And I know exactly the attitude you're talking about. I was walking away, David, and milk used to, now it comes in a plastic bag, but it used to come in those little hard wax paper cartons.
Oh yeah.
And I was walking away, and it was a warm enough day, you know, it was early spring or something, a very light windbreaker on just, you know, windbreaker shirt and me, and this little bully punk took a wadded up milk carton, as compressed as hard as he could, and threw it and hit me in the back. And it stung like crazy.
Yep.
And I was known for walking around with a Bible in my pocket at the time, okay? I mean, this was back when I was deep in the tentacles of the Southern Baptist Church. And I turned around at that point in time, and I walked over, and I pulled my right fist back as far as it would go, and I tried to drive it through his head. And he went down. And I walked away, walked to the principal's office and said, well, you know, call the parents.
Yeah.
Principal looked at me and said, go to class. But, no, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, America might just be revving up for that. Let's get back to Newt for just a little bit. Newt is very, very angry because somebody leaked the battle plan. He and a couple of others, their playbook says, talk about World War III for 4 to 6 weeks, whether it develops or not, and then the question that's going to come right behind that is, do you want Bill Clinton and John Kerry defending you, or do you want Bullhorn George standing on the rubble and his little minion? That's the battle plan. They're down to that and nothing else.
I think you're right.
That is the battle plan for the 06 election and for the 08 election, is to scream about the dangers abroad and don't change horses in the middle of the stream, and we've got to give the man that's protected us so far what he needs.
Well, I'm tired of riding horseback. I'm ready to get on one of Mr. Ford's newfangled buggies.
Something's got to happen. And there's one other thing lying out there for us. Luckily, I have access via AM radio, believe it or not, in Nashville. Access to about 8 hours a day of BBC News, and it's wonderful. And the BBC had a long interview with an American citizen. Early, you mentioned the town of Tyre.
Yep.
It's still there, Bob.
Yes, it is. I've seen it on Google Earth.
It's still there, and there is a hotel that houses, number one, the UN contingent for the area, and it also houses, based on this woman's estimate, 50 to 60 Americans and another 300 people of various European nationalities that were there on vacation. She's there with her 8-month-old daughter, her 3-year-old daughter. Her 10-year-old son is still in central Michigan where they live. There is no water. There is no electricity. There is no food as of 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon. And they have been instructed via a UN functionary to not leave that hotel, that, quote, you will be evacuated to Beirut when it is safe for you to move out of this hotel. Tyre is not Beirut.
No.
The ships are leaving Beirut. They're not leaving anywhere but there. There are nearly 15,000 Americans in Lebanon. What's going to happen if that Israeli pilot keys in 6774 rather than 6647 for the coordinate on that Hezbollah apartment complex? And one of those hotels goes up. What the hell kind of mess is George going to be in when 40?
He's not going to be, David, he's not going to be in a mess. Because it's a large wheel. It's a large wheel.
Well, say that all he wants, but I think it's going to shock enough people out of it. I don't think
David, I don't mean to disagree with you, brother, but what year did the barracks blow up in Beirut? Was that 1984?
Yep.
We reelected Reagan after that. Republican presidents benefit from the unerring willingness of a certain element of the... let me put it this way. How many times have you seen the photograph of George Bush holding his middle finger up at the television camera?
I've seen it.
We've all seen it. Not a word from the so-called religious right. Now we got the brown word today in Russia. There won't be a word said about it. Although L. Brent Bozo III, with his little weirdos, will chase. You know, they'll chase down NPR for running the word. They will. And I don't mean to be too negative, but you know what'll happen if something like that goes down, like what you described? Precisely nothing, because the American people, whether they voted for Bush or didn't, expect no leadership of him and expect nothing of him. The people who support him think what he's doing is already leadership. But, you know, I guess I'm crazy that way. I got to roll on, David. We got an interview coming up. I think you'll enjoy it.
Oh, good.
All right.
I will enjoy it just as I do almost, well, not almost. I will enjoy it as I do everything else. Bob, thanks for the chance to chat.
Thank you, David. Take care.
Yeah.
Bye now. And let's see, yeah, let's go straight to the phones. Pastor Dan, are you there? Wait. Pastor Dan, are you there, sir?
I'm here.
Okay, I'm sorry you had to wait. I sincerely apologize. Let me let everybody know who you are. And this is Pastor Dan from Street Prophets.
That's right.
You are part. You've been partaking of the Progressive Faith blog.
Progressive Faith Blog Convention.
Yeah, Blog Convention. Okay. See, I see con and I think conservative and my brain just...
Right. Well, there is
fries.
Also a Progressive Faith Blog Con blog, which is a separate entity.
Okay. First of all, tell us a little bit about yourself, please, sir.
I am a United Church of Christ minister living in central Pennsylvania. I preach at the moment at a tiny, tiny Baptist church. Up in coal country.
Okay.
We have about 9 or 15 people in church on Sunday morning.
Sounds like one I could actually attend and feel good about, to be quite honest.
Well, you would stick out like a sore thumb because we don't have that many visitors, but you would be welcome. I've been blogging at Daily Coast for a little over 2 years now and have been running Street Profits, which is... the first official offshoot of Daily Coast for about a year.
Well, in participating in the blog con that you were involved with, this was specifically a gathering, though, of progressive people of faith. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's the first of the kind of convention. The way I understand it is that there is a God blog con, which is really filled with more conservative Christians. And some folks saw that and decided they weren't too comfortable with it and decided to put together something for faithful progressives. And so here we are.
Well, what kind of a mix of the faith community do you have there, Dan?
We had... I want to say about half Christians and maybe 25% or 33% Jews. And we had a couple Muslims, a couple Buddhists, some assorted Unitarian Universalists, and actually a couple atheists were there, too. So real nice mix of people.
Well, I should think so. But and being progressives, you do certainly differentiate yourself from the what I call the right wing religion industry. Just to let you know, I'm not in a place where I can accept that folks in the religion industry I don't recognize the Jesus that they claim to worship, to be quite honest with you, Pastor Dan. I just don't. My Bible says, suffer the little children to come unto me. It doesn't say, come on, y'all, and let's go make them little children suffer.
Right.
Exactly.
We like to think about Jesus as a peacemaker rather than a warlord.
Right. The Prince of Peace, Emmanuel.
Yeah, you got it.
That being the case, what kind of topics did you discuss?
Well, really, the purpose of the convention was to get the leadership together for kind of a retreat, to introduce ourselves to one another, just build some connections, and you know, see if we could forge a way together, forward together. So we talked about how to blog on scripture, about different prayer styles. We had a Muslim prayer leader who came and walked us through Friday evening prayers at the mosque, which is very interesting.
Oh, I should think.
And talked about some different issues, how to respond to the religious right, poverty, war. So we talked a lot about the situation in Lebanon in that.
I don't see how you couldn't, frankly.
Right. And we were all pretty tense on that one because we had a few of the Jewish folks there and a few of the Muslim folks, and we all thought that, you know, well, it was going to get interesting. But it turned out to be a very fruitful conversation.
Well, it seems to me when you get away from that part of the world, the dialogue can actually begin.
Right.
Did you experience that?
Well, the reason it worked was that we managed to talk about the kinds of connections that people have to that part of the world. So, you know, the Jewish folks were able to step back and say, of course we have friends in Israel. We have relatives there. That doesn't mean that we support everything the state of Israel does, or that we are in favor of some of their more colonial projects. And it was the same way from the Muslim folk. You know, they're not going to associate themselves with Hezbollah. They don't believe in that. You know, they're peaceful people. So, yeah, it wound up being a very good conversation.
Well, I'm curious. You mentioned that one of the things that you did dialogue on and discuss was how to respond to the religious right. Did you, straight up, did you come up with any answers? Because I spend a lot of time, a lot of my personal time, thinking about things like that, and I haven't, because, frankly, I see these people, and I mean, things like Ye Generation of Vipers comes to mind, and the next thing you know, I'm just running around the room screaming. Is there a way to approach and engage the followers of Dobson and Falwell and Robertson and D. James Kennedy and James Robison and Swaggart and that? Is it possible?
Oh, that, absolutely it is. Let me tell you a story that I told at the convention. A few years ago, I had a secretary who was a real follower of Dobson. I mean, listened to him five nights a week, took his parenting advice, his gospel, I mean, the whole nine yards, had all of his books. And one day towards the end of my time at that church, he made some comment to me about those, you know, those blankety-blank gays, or, you know, something about gay marriage. And I thought, well, you know what, I don't have anything to lose here. So I'm going to find out what this is about. But I said to her, well, you know, what do you mean? What's your problem? And, you know, took what she was saying seriously instead of just blowing it off. Well, so I kind of walked her back through it. So when you say, you know, gay marriage is ruining your family, what do you mean by that? Well, after a while, the real story began to emerge. She and her husband are having a terrible time making ends meet. She has to run all over two counties to get her kids to enrichment programs and school and here and there. And And she's afraid, after her alcoholic brother-in-law died, that she and her husband are going to have to start raising her alcoholic sister-in-law's children. And she can barely keep her own family going. So, and her, you know, her job doesn't pay enough, and they don't appreciate her, and just on. And so I finally said to her, well, it sounds to me like the problem is not gay marriage for you. The problem is really that you feel like the world is collapsing around you, and you don't know what to do. And she said, yeah, that's really it. You know, the world's falling down. So what you have to be able to do is to take those people seriously, because they're really worried about what's going on in their lives and in the world around them. Now, that's not to say that they always deal with that appropriately.
Well, they've been sold. I mean, it's safe to say then, isn't it, Pastor Dan? They've been sold a bill of goods.
In many ways, yes. Yep, absolutely. It's a really easy book to write, that those thinking homosexuals are ruining your family. Because there's an easy cause of your problems.
But it turns out it's the people that, in large part, it's the people they put in office who are actively engaged in a war on their family values.
Yes, in many ways, yes. You know, because what happens, as I'm sure you know, is that the Republicans get into power on that platform of family values, but then they turn around and they actually govern on corporate values.
Well, they do everything they can to take the American family apart. I'm sympathetic. There is no more sympathetic human being out there than me to issues of family values. My producer, to whom you spoke, that's my lovely wife.
Ah.
And we're raising three kids.
Right.
And we raised four. One of them's technically an adult now. And we're just grateful to have her there.
She's always just technically adult.
Amen. You know? But I see what's out there. We live how difficult it is to get from day to day.
Right.
But it's no fault of a couple of guys wanting to pick out a silver service. This is, I mean, you want to talk about the attack on the American family. The Bush White House gave its staffers $4,000 and $5,000 raises, and then the Congress gave itself a raise at the same time that they couldn't find the Christian charity in their hearts to raise the minimum wage from $5 to $7. You want a war on traditional family values? There's the trench.
Isn't it amazing that the Congress can raise its own salary by thousands of dollars and yet leave the minimum wage untouched? I mean,
and what
does it say in the Bible? The worker shall be paid his wages.
Yeah, and in the parable of the worker, the guy who comes in at 4:45 gets the same day rate as the guy who worked all day.
Absolutely.
Now, and what drives me crazy, Pastor Dan, is that I have to sit and what, because you know it's the nature of my job. I have to sit and watch these, pardon me, freaks. Sit there and talk religious psychobabble about family values, and then turn around and stick a knife in the American family. I mean,
right.
this is not Jesus conduct. This is Judas conduct.
I wouldn't say that, and I'll tell you why not. Because Judas is a traditional name for Jews.
Okay, well, I stand corrected.
Okay. So, you know, throughout history, it has been, you know, the Judas and the Jews who killed Christians. So stay away from that. But, yeah, I see where you're going with that.
And they're scaring me to death. You're out there in the blogosphere. You're associated with Daily Coast. I mean, you know what a varied experience this can be.
Mm-hmm.
We've been talking about a website on this program, and my friends, I don't refer to people as my audience. I'm not some sort of royalty. But my friends who listen to this program have gone and looked at a website called RaptureReady.com.
Yes.
And with the escalation of the horror and the death and the misery in the Levant, there have actually been postings there hollering, "Come, Lord Jesus, if it just gets a little bit worse, I really think we're moving into the last stage of the end time, and I feel so bad for you people who are going to be left behind because I'm flying to the clouds."
Well, here's what you have to get about that. The hook in that is that God has a plan for us. And God is going to take care of me when the chips come down, right? And God is going to pull me up to heaven when the moment comes. So there's a definite sense of trust in divine providence there. But what they're not able to see is how destructive that is in the world around them. You with me so far?
Yes, I am. Oh, I am.
Okay. So what you have to be able to do is to help those people understand that maybe God has a plan that's also going to take care of the rest of the world and be just about it as things go along. Because, you know, they're not dumb.
No, they're not. There is some sophistication in this, and these people scare me because, among other things, I'm sure you're familiar with it, this Left Behind video game that's going out to pimply-faced adolescent teenagers now.
Right.
That has soldiers who have a prayer button who go out and enhance their game-playing. You get better in the game by killing the queers and by killing the Muslims and by killing the apostates.
Right. Right.
This is what makes it difficult for me, Pastor Dan.
It's dehumanizing.
Yes.
Is what it is. And what it does is it promotes this vision of faith of being sort of, it's me and Jesus, and all the rest of y'all can just go to hell.
Precisely. And there's that apocalyptic thing that happens afterward that's really horrifying, and it's the dirty little secret of the religious right, and it's a secret they keep from their pals in the apocalyptic Jewish community. And that is that after Jesus gets in his holy rolls and comes back to earth, these people think that they get to put the Jews to the sword.
Right. Right. And everybody converts.
Yeah.
And we all end up Christians in the end, right?
And frisbees and wheat checks and the New Jerusalem.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, so this is the kind of stuff that we're trying to deal with, to work with here. We're doing that by working within the progressive tradition at large and trying to build some connections between places like Daily Coast and some of the faith blogs out there, and helping really to reintegrate the religious tradition back into the progressive community.
Well, so much of it started there.
Exactly.
The civil rights movement started in the Highland School, I believe it was, in East Tennessee.
Right.
And that had religious roots and it had labor roots.
Absolutely. Abolition.
Abolition had its roots in religion.
Yep. So did prohibition, but we'll gloss right over that one, right?
Yeah, we'll take that as read.
Exactly. You know, you make a mistake every once in a while. sure. You know, there's the whole social gospel movement in the late 1800s, which helped work hand-in-hand with the social work movement. So
yes,
that comes out of the faith tradition. Believe it or not, the Pledge of Allegiance, without, under God, was written by a Baptist minister in
yes.
1800s.
There's a lot of it there, and so much of it has been, I mean, what other word can we use, Pastor Dan, besides perverted?
Right.
It was pointed out by one of our faith-oriented friends at one point that the word Antichrist, which is, you know, it's the darling of the religious right, it never appears in the New Testament in the singular. The word Antichrist appears in the plural.
Hmm.
There shall be many Antichrists.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. I've never heard that, actually.
And that turned a light bulb on for me.
Right.
Now, and it would seem to, you know, and I've asked the question repeatedly, you know, if the road to hell is broad and everybody's going to be on it, shouldn't some of these right wingers in their mega churches kind of have a look down at the width of the asphalt?
Right. Right. Absolutely. Well, and what's particularly disturbing to me is that many of those people, not all, but many of them, are doing it not for religious reasons, but for political gain.
Gosh, yes.
You know, Ralph Reed, you know, he puts on a good act, but when you really get down to it, he's not much of a Christian. He's a secular political activist. Jack Abramoff, you know, apparently is personally a very pious man, but he wasn't running around with Reed and Tom DeLay doing the work of the kingdom of God.
Well, you can't hardly go out to the Marianas Islands and militate for low wages for workers and see to it that Chinese teenage girls are forced into prostitution and abortions and come back and sit down and break bread and holler Hosanna.
Yeah.
Now, I guess the question is, we've talked about some about George Bush's use of the brown word today.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, I've got a rather negative viewpoint on it. Because you see, Pastor Dan, that I was raised in the Baptist Church.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the Southern Baptist Church. I describe myself as a recovering Southern Baptist.
Right. I heard you used to walk around with a Bible in your back pocket.
Yeah. I mean, I've walked the walk. I come from that place. There is a 94-year-old woman who lives next to my father in Alabama who has done her best to walk in the footsteps of the carpenter for 94 years.
Right.
And yet she will sit down and tell you that Bill Clinton was a godless man.
Right.
That was my home church that I came out of. The late 1980s, early 1990s, they paid a $25,000 honorarium to Oliver North to come and speak to them.
Oh, that's tacky.
Well, yeah, that is forgive me, Pastor Dan, that is a dead church.
Yeah. Why? Because, you know, they've given up, I don't want to say they've given up God, but they've given up spirituality in favor of a politics, is what that comes down to. They have allowed their religion and their politics to become so intermingled that they can't tell where the one ends and the other picks up. And that's a really sad thing.
And they pollute the one at the advancement of the other.
You got it.
Well, Pastor Dan, where does after this with the BlogCon, what comes next?
Well, we're working on that.
We always are, aren't we?
Oh, goodness. You know, I think the most important thing that we can do is to simply advance that true narrative, to just get out there and say it in as many ways as we can, many different venues. Religion is not about hate. It's not about who it separates you from. It is not about getting one over on your neighbor. It's about helping your neighbor and finding a way to and uniting with the people of the world. We have allowed in this country the narrative that religion is about all of those negative things to just flourish. And people have not stood up and said, it's not true. And you'd be surprised how few people.
Well, some people, to be honest, right. Pastor Dan, some people have done that. Mm-hmm. They've been run out of their churches. I well remember the church in North Carolina 2 years ago year and a half ago in which the pastor excommunicated his Kerry voters for refusing to repent of voting for John Kerry.
Right. And this is, here's a word to the wise. That church collapsed not long after that. They are down to a third or less of their original members. Why? Because that pastor had some real problems they took out through political means. And it wasn't good for the church. So if you're going to bring that kind of partisanship into the church, it's going to destroy it. And people of all political stripes should take caution from that story.
Well, absolutely, and my heart goes out to committed and practicing Roman Catholics who have had their dioceses split into not just over the child sexual abuse scandals that have rocked this nation, but over the business that went down again in the 2004 elections, where there were priests walking around saying John Kerry cannot have communion.
Right. Right. One of the things that the Interfaith Alliance is working on is a new election guide for churches, basically talking about the law, and this is what you can do and what you can't do. And they've divided it, they tell me, into two parts. One is the law, these are the rules, but then here are some guidelines for what's ethical and what's not ethical, so that even if it were legal to kick the Democrats of your church out, not a very ethical kind of thing to do.
Not one of those WWJD moments, is it?
No, exactly. So to help them think through those kinds of things.
Well, Pastor Dan, we're running out of time, but tell people, please, where they can go to see this in action, how they can advance this effort, please.
You can come and find us at a number of sites. There's always threeprophets.com. That's my place. There is a site called talktoaction.com or .org, which is more focused on the religious right and issues of separation, talking about dominionism. You can hook up through Faith in Public Life, which is an organization out of D.C.
Okay.
Or try the Velveteen Rabbi.
I saw that website. I had to go see that.
She's great.
Anybody who can put up a site like that with a name like that, I got to go.
Yeah, she's great. She's great. All of these places have links to other organizations and blogs that you can get on. There's all kinds of good stuff out there.
Well, could I ask a favor of you, please, sir?
Sure.
We are a fledgling network,
mm-hmm.
but we are, in fact, America's other liberal network. Everyone knows that Air America is out there, and they produce a fine, fine product.
Right.
But we are not afraid to talk about issues of faith.
Right.
We're not afraid to talk about issues of community organizing, grassroots. I'm not the only host on this network. We have excellent. Talk coming from folks like our good friend Bruce Birch, Guy James, Mark Levine, John Fox, and we're really trying to change the dialogue. If you can tell, I hope, from our conversation here, what we bill ourselves here is as conversation radio as opposed to talk radio.
Right.
The one thing we don't have is a paid PR person or anything like that. We need word of mouth, Pastor Dan.
Okay.
If you would be so kind, please, if you can, just to let folks know that this conversation is out there for them to have.
Okay.
We would sincerely appreciate it. And yeah, it has been a joy having you on the program.
If you have a sound clip of the interview, send it over to me.
Okay. Could you, I tell you what, when we go to break, don't hang up. My darling wife will be there and pick you up off of hold, and I'll get an email from you, and we will send you that sound clip straight away.
And we'll get that posted with some links for you.
Well, thank you very kindly, Pastor Dan.
Thank you for having me on.
This has been a blessing.
Yeah, thank you. Likewise.
And I wish you the very best, and maybe I'll run across you over at Street Profits.
Okay.
All right.
Love to have you.
Bye now.
Bye.
Pastor Dan from Street Profits. It really is. It was a blessing. What's the Hebrew word for that? A mitzvah, I think. I don't know. But what it is also is coming up on the final hour of the program. Stick around. Your phone calls are welcome. 877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. Westerners living in Beirut have been evacuating. At least 64 Americans have been flown by helicopter to the nearby island of Cyprus, and France and Italy have also begun evacuations. Tomorrow, a cruise ship chartered by the U.S. government is expected to take some of the approximately 25,000 Americans out of Lebanon. In Israel, Hezbollah rockets struck the Israeli city of Haifa today, and more than 40 people were killed in Israeli strikes into Lebanon. One of those strikes destroyed a long-range missile that could have reached Tel Aviv. New reports indicate an Israeli strike on Beirut's suburbs. In Israel, Prime Minister Ehud Olmert appears to be backing off his demand that Hezbollah be dismantled as a condition for a ceasefire, but he's still demanding that two soldiers captured on Wednesday be released before Israel will agree to a ceasefire. He also wants Hezbollah to stop launching rockets into Israel and for Lebanese forces to take control of southern Lebanon. Near Java, at least 86 people were killed in a tsunami prompted by an earthquake this morning. But more bodies are expected to be found as rescuers continue searching for victims. Near Baghdad today, at least 50 people were killed and 90 wounded when gunmen attacked an open-air market. And the U.S. military reported today that three U.S. soldiers were killed while a fourth died from earlier injuries. The Security Council has adopted a resolution regarding North Korea's recent missile launches. It calls for the country to suspend the program and bans the sale of missile-related material or technology to Pyongyang. Yesterday, North Korea rejected that resolution, warning it could lead to a new Korean War. In St. Petersburg, Russia today, the G8 Summit of World Leaders concluded. The escalating Middle East crisis took center stage. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is expected to travel there soon. In Washington, senators have begun debating whether to use federal funding for stem cell research. It's expected to pass tomorrow, but the bill faces an immediate veto threat from President Bush. However, Mr. Bush is expected to sign two other bills scheduled for votes tomorrow. One would encourage the study of non-embryonic stem cells, and the other would ban the abortion of fetuses developed solely for scientific research. In Mexico, President Vicente Fox says President Bush told him Congress is not likely to pass immigration reform before the November elections. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist reportedly blames the delay on election year politics and a virtual standstill in the House.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Industrial production rose 0.8% in June. The Federal Reserve says that reflects more manufacturing, mining, and auto production activity. Executives from GM and Renault Nissan say they'll explore the possibility of joining forces, but Business Week Online reports that Toyota may try to block that deal by forming its own alliance with GM. The head of an offshore gambling company was taken into custody today. He's accused of taking bets from U.S. residents on professional and college sports. Microsoft has filed 26 lawsuits aimed at clamping down on pirated software. The suits were filed in 7 states, including Georgia, Colorado, New York, and New Jersey. IBM has won a $17 million contract from the U.S. government. The company will provide instant messaging, web conferencing, and other services to the Defense Department. Airbus has unveiled its new mid-sized A350 plane, which features a newly designed extra-wide body. It's expected to go into service by the year 2012. Commercial space liner Virgin Galactic is accepting deposits for its first space flight in 2008. Each ticket costs $200,000. Light sweet crude settled at $75.30 today. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 8 points at 10,747. The Nasdaq was flat at 2038. The S&P 500 was down 2 at 1234. You can hear more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
That was an uplifting experience. It really and truly was. And I appreciate Pastor Dan coming on and chatting with us. I think I'll be going over and having a more in-depth look at some of the sites he mentioned. And I think one of the things that has to happen is one has to differentiate between the leadership and the people who follow. Because there are some people who are so hungry for something to believe in that they will follow the first person who reaches out to them in the most charismatic fashion. And if you present, and you know, there's a long history of this throughout the world. If you're charismatic and you're able to present simple solutions to complex problems, odds are you will wind up with a considerable following, whether it be Father Coughlin, Adolf Hitler, Genghis Khan, Constantine. The list is long. Let's go to the phones, though, because our good friend Luke in Knoxville, Tennessee, has probably grown a couple of new gray hairs since he's been on hold. Hey, Luke, thanks for waiting, brother.
Oh, that's all right, Bob. I was going to say, you know, I'm just waiting tonight. I have a decision, and I don't know which one I'm looking forward to more tonight, The Daily Show or David Letterman.
That's going to be a tough call.
Oh, because I have a feeling that this is going to make Dave's going to have to do a top 10 on this one.
I don't know. This may get its own segment.
Oh, God. You know, the thing is,
but wait,
it's like you said. My mama would have slapped me so hard for talking with my mouth full of food.
Yeah, before you even got to the word.
My head would be ringing for the next decade. I mean,
didn't I teach you any better than that?
I swear, I think if he'd been raised by wolves, they'd have taught him better than that.
Well, I agree. And the thing is, it's so much of this, you know. I take a little criticism for gooning on Barbara Bush, but you know what a mom. You know, the day you bury your 3-year-old daughter, you go play golf.
Well, the one that's got to be is. You just got to wonder what it's like when Herbert and his people get together, and he has to look around the table at people like Baker and all this, and they look at GW, and it's sort of like,
Well, I know.
This is the family legacy.
I know, and the thing is, some of this isn't really hard to do.
That's the thing. I mean, you know, it's like you say, it's like George. From now on, whenever you sit down to eat or whatever, you reach down, you turn the little switch that says on and off. Now, chances are,
yeah, but see, that was that was probably written in that funny backwards Russian language stuff.
Fine, you reach down and you pull the cable off the microphone.
Yeah, right. You know, I wonder if he was set up.
No, no. It's like, no.
You don't think old Pooty Poot, you don't think old Pooty Poot with the years and years and years in the KGB
Oh.
I mean, you know, is this?
I'd be more afraid of something going off in the food from Pooty Poot.
Well, no, but see, he's taking tasters with him. They bring his own private toilet. They collect Dear Leader's caca.
Yeah.
I kind of halfway wondered, Luke, if this wasn't the political and diplomatic equivalent of putting George Bush's hand in warm water while he was asleep.
No, you know why though? Because you got to think Putin would have done something even more clever than this. This is just something where he just sort of sits back and goes, we've got 3 or 4 days. I figure he's going to screw up at least twice, really good. And once is going to have to be in front of the cameras. You just know it is.
Well, and
I mean, he didn't go over at least this time and try to open a closed door.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Oh, God, I'd almost forgotten.
You know what I mean? It's like you just got to wonder. His favorite show, of course, has to be watching on Spike TV where they show the Stooges. You know what I mean? That's got to be his favorite show.
Yeah, and see, there were other things. I mean, okay, he said that word, but some of the other things were some precious little gems too that I've got saved away now. Statements like Russia's a big country, so's China.
And?
But he was proud of himself. I mean, you know, this wasn't one of those scripted things where he's standing there in front of the microphone, you know, sort of blinking like a fire lizard from the Galapagos Islands or anything. You know. No, he was trying to be profound. China's a big country. So's Russia. Jiminy.
It's like, if you can see a globe, you've got that one figured out, George.
Hey, Blair, what are you doing?
Well, the only thing I'm surprised is he didn't snap his fingers like calling for a waiter.
Oh,
you know.
But there's so much more. This is such an onion. This is such an onion, Luke, because the thing in Germany with the pig comments.
Oh, God.
People are asking him the highfalutin policy question. You know, I may get to carve the pig tonight.
I was sitting there going, I figure if I'm Putin right then, I'm just grabbing the first butcher knife I can't go over, just cut the throat of the pig while you're right there.
Well,
it's like, it's over.
Keep this man away from sharp cutlery. I mean, belts, shoelaces, padded rooms.
I know. Well, let's switch subjects just for a little bit, because we'll burn out on this eventually.
Yeah, because I still haven't played the soundbite.
Okay, well, I was going to say, do you want to tell, because I don't have it up right now, do you want to tell about the story I sent you?
Oh, dear God.
It's like I said, the three Stooges, Larry Moe and Shemp down here, it's like saying, you're just waiting to see which one of them ends up shooting each other, shoot the other one in the foot or something.
Yeah, Luke, you're our buddy, and you keep us up on between you and David and over in Nash Vegas.
I wish you brought this up with David. I'm sure he may not even. Thing is, I had to hunt for it. Because I went to, like, the Chattanooga Times. There's no mention of it.
Well, it was a confusing story. You know, we talked the other night about these three clowns running for the Republican nomination for Senate down there. Yeah. There's Bryant and Hillary and who's the other one?
Okay, it's Ed Bryant, Van Hillary, and Bob Corker.
Bob Corker, yeah. Because I can remember Van Hillary because I've got this vision of Eddie Van Halen fronting a band where Hillary's the girl singer, so that's easy. Ed Bryant and then Corker. Yeah, he's a corker. It was one of Corker's people has been tormenting one of.
Well, one of has been wearing a chicken suit.
Yeah,
and going because Corker I think it was would not show up at a debate or something.
Right.
You can tell the rest of it because I don't have it up right now.
Well, no, like I said, it's kind of confusing. So the chicken suited guy shows up. Boy, that's just got trouble written all over it.
At a Bryant thing. Valley.
And a Bryant worker
is trying to take a picture.
Is trying to take a picture of the guy once he gets the chicken head off of to drive away.
And he's in like a Volvo or something like that. And of course, he runs over the person.
And he runs over the Bryant guy, but then the Corker campaign comes out and says, "No, this guy was trying to bash the windshield in."
Well, apparently, what happened was
with his head.
I assume he jumped up and hit the windshield. Now we laugh about this, but the fellow was not apparently seriously hurt.
No, he wasn't. Yeah.
Apparently, he had to have some glass.
But that's that defense where you say, "I didn't hit the dude. The dude ran into my fist."
Oh,
but this is You know, but it gets better. There's another one. Did you catch what's coming out of my native state now?
Mm-mm. What's yours?
This
could be dueling dummies. You know.
Oh, well, you know, whenever you're talking Republicans south of the Mason-Dixie line, you know, it's just going to be fun, Luke. The chairman of the Alabama Republican Party has offered and thinks she is taunting Howard Dean by buying him a plane ticket to come and talk to the Democrats in Alabama. And of course,
I'm
they're
on
playing
a plane. Hell yeah.
They're liberals. See, they don't want nothing to do with Howard Dean right now because he's a liberal, and they're trying to tell people they're conservative, but there's not a dime's worth of difference between the National and the Alabama Democratic Party. It's the same thing. But wait, it's a Ginsu commercial, Luke. There's more.
Oh, God.
So this is a woman. And I'm no sexist. And this is one of those precious moments, Luke, because I have not told my darling wife this story.
Uh-oh.
The woman who runs the Alabama GOP, mm-hmm. and, you know, you can only get these names in the South. You know, this is not a name that's going to come from Wisconsin or anything. The name of the name of the chairman of the Alabama GOP is Twinkle Kavanaugh.
Oh, God.
What?
Twinkle Andress Kavanaugh.
And she lets people know this, doesn't she?
It's not like this is a nickname. This is on the birth certificate. She was Twinkle Andress until she married veterinarian Dr. John Kavanaugh of Montgomery.
You know, go to the court, you can have that fixed, I promise, you know.
You know, it's one of those singing moments, you know, Twinkle, Twinkle, little thug, who put that goofy name on your ugly mug? But Twinkle?
I'm going to the court.
Yeah, I know. I just know she's an aging majorette. I know it beyond a shadow of a doubt. But what I want to know next, and we've got some listeners in Alabama, the thing I want to know next is she Alabama or is she Auburn?
Oh, God.
Now, being
Mother Miss, probably.
That's an Alabama. That girl had to have gone to Alabama or Auburn. But a woman named Twinkle...
Oh, God.
Thinks that she is going to embarrass Howard Dean by giving him a plane ticket.
It's like, hey, I'm on the plane.
I cannot make this stuff up. Just like when I found out that, you know, we've been running that promo with the character that called in, you know, Beauregard B. Clampett.
Yeah.
The dumbest man in the United States Senate, Senator Jeff Sessions.
Oh, no. Ted Stevens.
Nah. I mean, this is a steel cage death match between those two, okay? Turns out, the dumbest man in the United States Senate, Senator Jeff Sessions, he's got one of them $10 South Alabama names. His name is Senator, I mean, he is Senator Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions III. Now, if this was just a little bit more off color, you know, the third right there, there's one I can work with. You know, the chair recognizes Senator Beauregard. Jiminy.
Well, I tell you what, though, I got to tell you, after I heard the full thing of Ted Stevens explaining the internet, I just was like, you just got to wonder why the people from Alaska don't send the guy in the white coats down to kiddie.
Well, I know, and I heard about all of that the same time, Luke, that I heard about the fact that they were trying to repeal the marijuana laws in Alaska, and suddenly I knew why.
Well, but the thing is, you know what the fun of all this is, don't you? He's the one that's in charge of the regulations on the internet.
Oh, no, Luke, it gets better. It gets better. He is four heartbeats away from the presidency.
I know. I try not to think about that.
He's the president pro tem of the Senate, which means right after Denny Hastert, he gets the job. Can you just hear President Stevens' State of the Union address? Anyway, you can't just dump all the budget problems on a big truck. We got tubes in the Congress.
But like I say, if you go over, if anybody wants to go over to like Crooks and Liars and listen to that, it is the most hilarious thing. Because it gets worse. I mean, you think the first time you think, you know, no, he didn't really mean it that way. He was using it as a euphemism. No, he means it that way. I watched the thing that had the thing with, was it Jon Stewart did it? And he did it with visuals.
Yeah.
It was hilarious.
No, you mean like a like a film strip or something?
Oh, no, no. He does like with animation, had the tubes. Oh, like I said, when you get a chance, go over to Crooks and Liars.
Oh, Lordy, I'm going to.
Stewart. And that will be one of the ones that comes up, and you got to watch it. It is, it's just, like I say, your mind is just sitting there just rattling back and forth going, no, I can't be seeing this. This can't be right. You know.
I know.
But as bad as we are, as bad as that one is in Alabama, I still think the one that takes the cake on this is going to be, before we all get done, is going to have to be the Catherine Harris thing in Florida.
Yeah,
that is. Oh God!
When former Reagan administration advisor Ed Rollins makes statements like, "Yeah, things get said that just drive her crazy," but you got to admit it's not a very long trip.
Well, the only good part about that is this. You know who the thing that this is involving is good old Joe Scarborough.
Oh, yeah, and the thing is, the one thing that Catherine Harris might have ever gotten right is the fact that he needs to be studiously inquired of about the death of Lori Klaisutis.
Mm-hmm.
Because
no one else brings it up.
God knows if this had happened to Bill Clinton, sweet heavenly days. Because, I mean, here's a girl in the prime of life who runs like 92 miles a day. She's beautiful. She's just an absolute bombshell. She's his intern.
Yeah.
And she keels over and drops dead.
Yep.
In his office.
Was it she hits her head and bleeds to death? Isn't that what it was?
Yeah, or, you know.
She passes out, hits her head like on a desk, supposedly. But that's what we'll go with, yeah.
Well, it was a lead pipe-shaped desk, okay,
yeah.
Luke? But then, in order to get this hushed up in a hurry, because Joe Scarborough is still in Congress at the time and has not at that point made his announcement that he wants to spend more time with his family and therefore will not run for re-election, they haul in this medical examiner who was de-licensed in the state of Missouri as a medical examiner, you know, as a forensic pathologist. You know, you're no longer competent enough to work on the dead.
We don't trust you with them.
Ooh.
And brought this person into Florida after a hasty licensure.
Well, like I say, we saw with the one there at the boys' camp. We saw how those Florida coroners really are real careful, you know, where they have to bring in others to find out what exactly did happen.
Oh.
So, it's one of those things.
I mean, but they're imploding all over the place.
I know. It's good in a way, but at the same time, you're just like, no. You know, it's like, God.
You know, but like for Sessions, he's not up until 08. Shelby's not up until 10.
Oh.
You know, meanwhile,
recall.
Yeah, I know. Poor Alabama has to just languish with this idiot passing himself off as a senator. And I mean, Sessions, did you realize that he was a rejected federal judge?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's one of those things. It's like,
and rejected by the Republican majority in the on the Senate Judiciary Committee at that.
Won't be happy. I'm surprised that Judge Moore hasn't shown up again yet.
Oh, he probably will.
He's one of the ones that's like, you know, it's like, you know, what was the thing, you know, when they were talking about it, you know, had the ideas for the ways what to do with that 10-ton weight, you know.
Jeez. I know.
So he said, well, I think one time I heard somebody say, yeah, we should use it for a sacrificial altar, and Judge Moore should go first. You know?
I know. But it is. They're coming unglued all over the country. And yet the thing is, they're faithful. And this is the point that I was trying to make earlier, Luke. They're faithful. We'll give them a pass.
Well, what was it, the thing that just came out this last week or so with the John Dean with the conscience of a conservative?
I've got the book right here in front of me. I hope to be having Mr. Dean on the show soon.
Okay. Well, I mean, he was talking about these things where they said, you know, said essentially, like, say, there's what is it, 23%. So, like we said, George Bush could shoot somebody on the front lawn of the White House and they'd still go, yay, George!
Jesus told him to.
Yeah, it was divine. He had to do it. It's
but
like,
see, and that's the thing, and I didn't get into it with Pastor Dan, Luke, but the thing is, the Dobsons and the Falwells and the really multi-billionaire, I mean, Dobson's ministry does 140, and he won't even call it a ministry, $140 million a year.
Oh.
How many people would that pay? How many poor people would that pay for health care? Because I get the idea you had a lot of the same reason I did.
Oh yeah.
You know, and you think about things like that. When that Southern Baptist Church that I grew up in spent $25,000 to bring Oliver North in, I guess that meant that Northwest Alabama was fresh out of homeless, hungry, suffering people.
Well, it's one of those things when you see them do things like that, you know what I mean, when they bring in these crusades and all that stuff, you're just sitting there going, can't we just put up a tent? I mean, if you want to have one of these, that's fine. Let's go, you know, get the tent. We'll put it up and have it. I've been to the good country ones, you know, out in Jefferson City around here, you want to meet up in the middle of a field where they've come out there and cut the field and put the tent up. I mean, you know, real revival. That's fine. I mean, I have no problem with that. But if some of these ones were, by golly, we got to have it inside the convention center. And it's like, no, that's not that. That's
it's the Happy Goodman family. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is the Tony Robbins version. You know, It's like, yeah, that's right. And that the lobby will be selling our books and T-shirts at the same time.
Well, that's like this Reverend Stanley, the younger one, that excommunicated his daddy because he got a divorce and he wasn't pure enough. Lordy. Franklin Graham dragging his poor daddy out in Baltimore.
Most people aren't, you know, you see how most of them aren't talking a whole lot about what Franklin says every once in a while. And Franklin opens his big mouth.
Oh, there was a dandy from Franklin not too long back, wasn't there?
Well, you know, I mean, it's one of those ones you hear it, and then everybody says, no, he never said that. No.
Well, that's, you know, and again, it comes back to some of the things that the Republican right knows that they can count on there. And these people earn it. You know, I used to take great. Why do you call everybody names, Bob? These knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing morons. They've earned it.
Hey, look at it this way. I always say, you always know it's always going to be a time when, like, here on the, I can't remember what channel it's on, one of them. It's not the Trinity or whatever. 4 a.m. sometimes when I'm waking up in the middle of the night, turn on the TV and there's the Jim Baker show.
They've got him in reruns?
No, it's him and his new wife.
No.
Oh, yes.
No. No pulling Bob's leg. Jim's not really on the air, is he?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, I'm going to be staying up late one of these nights because I get Trinity.
I don't know what it is.
I don't get History International, but by Jove, I get Trinity.
Which one? Hang on just a quick second. Let me pull over here, and I'll pull it up here real quick. I've got the TV on. On ours, it's not on a thing. It's on a station called WVLR, which I have no clue what this is. But at, let's see here, 3 o'clock at 7, the 700 Club. At 4 o'clock, the Jim Baker Show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then at 5 o'clock you get your day with Lindsay Roberts, and it's I turned it on one morning and I saw it, but I was like, because his hair's taking the southern trip.
Luke, we've got good news in, or at least good news for me.
Oh, okay.
As a former student of the Capstone.
Uh-oh.
Twinkles Kavanaugh is an Auburn babe.
City that hides in the middle of the plains. Yes.
War Eagle. Oh, so War Eagle.
Well, which is it now? The one thing I've got to love about Auburn is it's amazing how they have a different mascot for each sport.
Oh, I know. They're eagle-shaped tigers.
Oh, God. It's one of those things. I just used to
it's
love
like a
that.
Grail. It's like a grail-shaped beacon. They're eagle-shaped tigers. Oh,
well,
boy.
I think it's the bottom of the hour.
Yeah. Luke, thanks so much. What a blast. This was a dandy. This one went all over. This is for the record book.
All right, bud. If I find something on that, I'll send it to you, though, about Jim. You'll just love it.
Do please. Right. I appreciate it. I gotta find the viewing listings.
Okay, like I say, I'll keep you apprised on the next chapter of Larry Moe and Chimp.
All right. Thanks a lot. Alrighty. Later, Luke. Our good friend Luke in Knoxville, Tennessee. Keeping a pulse beat on the weirdness that is the Republican Party south of the Mason-Dixon line. Not that they're much less weird north of it. That's right. You call the GOP home office there in Montgomery. You got to say it that way, by the way. Montgomery. You call the GOP home office there, and you ask for the state party chairman, And she answers the phone and says, I'm Twinkles. Fly me. Mother. Twinkles. Did they not think this would get out, that the rest of the nation would find out that their chairman is named Twinkle?
Little star.
Oh, she is. That's why we named her that. She's our little star. She's a snowflake baby. Oh, God. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell.
This is probably been the most unique circumstance. We hit the ground running with a 10-day window in order to reach an agreement. I've never seen anything like it in the 15 years I've been in this industry. So it's been a huge task, and I'm very proud of the professional negotiators on both sides of the table.
That's Danny Campbell, the Interim Master Executive Council Vice President with the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, commenting on the tentative agreement the union has reached with Northwest Airlines. AFACWA says the tentative agreement was reached following a week of intense bargaining in a final marathon session. The union says it's not a day to celebrate, but it gives flight attendants hope for the future and the ability to fight another day. That's because the agreement heads off the destruction of the union's Northwest contracts, which was allowed by the bankruptcy court.
All of us Northwest employees look forward to the day we can see our carrier get out of the bankruptcy process so we can hopefully at some point see progressive bargaining again.
The agreement will be presented to local union presidents from each base in the Northwest Airlines system, and if they approve, it will be sent out then to the flight attendants for their ratification.
A new report shows that minimum wage earners aren't keeping up with inflation. According to a study by the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, states with the federal minimum wage are being hit the hardest. Isaac Shapiro is associate director of the center. He says the current federal minimum, when adjusted for inflation, is equal to what was being paid 51 years ago.
It's now reached its lowest level since 1955 after adjusting for inflation. So they aren't really benefiting from this recovery.
The federal minimum wage hasn't seen a boost in nearly 10 years. Democrats in Congress are currently pushing for an increase from $5.15 per hour to $7.25 per hour. Many Republicans are opposed to the increase. Shapiro says wage increases scare business because it looks like a huge jump in pay. He suggests one way to alleviate the concerns of businesses would be to tie future wage increases to inflation.
Sort of herky-jerky adjustments in the wage level, which I think make less sense from the perspective of businesses than gradual, steady wage adjustment.
Here is today's economic report. What's more American, a Ford Mustang or a Toyota Sienna? If you look under the hood and beyond the name, you might be in for a surprise. New statistics from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and reported in Thursday's Wall Street Journal show that the Sienna, assembled in Indiana, contains 90% North American parts. On the flip side, the Mustang, an American icon, is assembled with 45% of its components coming from abroad.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
programs in. Just, okay. I'm going straight back to the phone in a wee second, but I have to finish up the Twinkle story by reading you Twinkle's letter. War Eagle Twinkle. Dear Chairman Dean, during recent preparations for the Alabama Republican Party's annual summer get-together, keynoted by RNC Chairman Ken Mellman, I was struck by the fact that very few Democrat Party leadership has made a recent high-profile trip to our state. While Chairman Mellman, Vice President Cheney, and even President Bush have made highly publicized visits to Alabama, we have not had the courtesy of a visit from you since a long while ago. While still governor of Vermont, you visited our state to talk politics with a Democrat politician recently convicted on federal corruption charges, but I'm unaware of any recent visits. Because I know, especially during this election year, the importance of pointing out the differences in our political philosophies, both in our state and our nation, I would like to extend a special invitation from the Alabama GOP, an airline ticket purchased on your behalf, a voucher for a round-trip flight from Washington, D.C. for your use to come to our state, meet with your party's gubernatorial nominee, and outline the positions of the National Democrat Party on any number of issues. Should you decide to take me up on this offer, please contact the state GOP headquarters. I will be happy to make arrangements. With best regards and deep hopes that we will see you in Alabama soon. Twinkle Andrus Kavanaugh, Chairman, Alabama Republican Party. See, that's that snotty, catty kind of southernness. That's, you know, that in other words, what she's saying is, don't show your face around here, you damn Yankee. Because, you see, Howard Dean's 50-state strategy scares the life out of the GOP in the Deep South because they've been left alone. John Kerry ignored the South. Al Gore pretty much ignored the South and would not go and engage. But Howard Dean says, by God, I'm going down there and I'm engaging them and I'm talking to them about real issues. Because the only way people like Twinkle can succeed down there is if there's no one there talking real issues and real politics and real family values to them while they're sitting there. The homosexuals are going to get your marriage. And inviting Ken Mellman, the original log closet Republican. Oh, my God. Let's go to the phones. Jim's been waiting. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
How are you?
I'm fine. Yourself?
Reasonably well. You've had quite a show tonight.
It's been a humdinger, I thought.
I was reading it. I just received my issue of Vanity Fair today, and there was an article there about Washington corruption. And in there was a paragraph about Catherine Harris being taken to dinner by Duke Cunningham.
And Mitchell Wade, the guy that bribed Duke himself.
Well, do you know how much those dinners cost?
Oh, golly Moses.
$2,200 for the first and $2,800 for the second.
Right. Yeah, I knew it was something just obscene. And she said it was because her husband took home wine.
Her husband did what? I beg your pardon?
She said that the bill was so high because her husband took home wine bottles that he had purchased there. And, of course, wanting to keep his job, the wine steward immediately said, oh, no, they didn't, because we wouldn't, we'd be in jail now if we did that.
Well, I'll tell you, I've had some pretty nice dinners and restaurants on both sides of the pond with some pretty good wine, but I never had to pay those kinds of prices, and I've eaten in D.C. as well. I don't understand that. I really don't.
Well, like I said, when
I guess Chateau Lafitte Pass is a little more expensive than it used to be, right?
A little bit, you know, Chateau Lafitte de Rothschild, you know, 1962 or whatever. Yeah, it doesn't come cheap, but it isn't. You'd have to be taking it home by the case.
And, you know, going back to the thing with Bush and his faux pas. That was over Russian television, correct?
Yes.
Well, I think Mr. Putin or Mr. Putin, they have just let that one go through. You know, he's a pretty shrewd fella.
Yeah, I think they set him up.
With making his name as an officer with the Committee of State Security, I don't think I would have enjoyed spending the night looking at him across the desk. Would you?
Not by a long shot, no. Now, that's when the battery cables and stuff like that come out.
And, you know, the thing about it is, he's a very shrewd man. And, unfortunately, our leader is not nearly as shrewd, in my opinion.
I don't think you can use shrewd and our leader in the same sentence and really get away with it, Jim.
But, you know, and as a final comment, as far as this blank check that they're giving to Israel, you don't have to go back 1,000 years to see what blank checks can do. I can remember when the Kaiser gave the Austrians the blank check back in 1914, and I can see what happened to them.
Yeah, like
it worked out where they wanted it to.
Yeah, it's a long list, and there are plenty of examples. And the sad thing is, Jim, with all the examples that are present and available and prevalent, these guys, the people who called themselves the smartest guys in the room, can't find one.
I don't know. I don't understand it. I really don't.
Well,
I just don't understand how.
The only thing, Jim, that I can see that makes any sense out of this is this is...
You can't give anybody carte blanche to do anything because, I mean...
Well, you can if you hope that it will provide the entree that you want to start another war with another country, to wit, Iran.
Yeah, but exactly. Where is that going to get us?
It's not us they're worried about. There is money to be made for GE and Northrop Grumman and whoever makes the cruise missiles. And their war is good business for the Republican Party, Jim, because their kids don't fight it.
Well, but don't they realize that this thing could very well escalate into something that could, you know, make all of their machinations?
No, because they're
this world into a burned out cinder.
You got to remember, this is the same party that used to talk about survivable nuclear war.
Well, you know, I mentioned this on Fourth State the other night. I watched the movie On the Beach.
A wonderful film.
Based on the book by Neville Shute. And by the way, I still think that Ava Gardner's birthday should be made a national banking holiday. I really do. But I mean, that's exactly. And, you know, and they were when the character played by Fred Astaire, who was an atomic scientist, you know, was trying to explain what had happened, he really couldn't. And, you know, it's just the rote stupidity of these people. I mean, they're literally playing with fire.
Yes, they are. And to bring up another great film from a similar time period, the Doomsday Device in Dr. Strangelove, you know, well, why didn't you tell us about it? Well, that was the purpose, was to not, we were going to announce it next week. We don't know the agreements that exist between Hezbollah, Syria, Iran. We simply do not know them, except that we see that Hezbollah is out there making cryptic statements like, well, there will be some quite exciting surprises coming for the Zionist state in the coming weeks.
Well, they very well may be speaking the truth. I don't know.
I don't either. But the thing is, that's not a state, you know, if you're trying to threaten somebody, you say, look, I got a nuke. You keep it up, I'll use it. That's what you do if you're trying to hold somebody off. Hezbollah, you know, I got nothing for Hezbollah. I got nothing for the Israel in this either. A pox on both of their houses.
Well,
the
know,
Lebanese people
not,
are victims.
They may not like to pursue that strategy. Maybe they want to, you know, play their cards very close to their chest. And pull an ace out of the deck, which they think is an ace. We don't know.
We don't know, but Jim, I swear I am convinced that a whole lot of this is being controlled by a gang of sociopathic, apocalyptic, eschatological nut jobs. I mean, because, you know, we don't hear about it a lot, but within it is out of Shia Islam that the concept of the Mahdi arose, the Messiah.
Well, is that something about the 12th Imam?
Yeah, that's him. That's the guy.
Well, I make no pretensions of understanding their religion. I can barely understand my own at times, and I'm glad it's confined to buildings with stained glass and not tents, but nonetheless.
But the Muslims have an apocalyptic tradition. the Jews who want to blow up the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock and rebuild Solomon's Temple, they've got an apocalyptic tradition. And then there's us. And we're just, right now, we're controlled by one big apocalyptic and so the Muslims are going to make the Mahdi come back. The Israelis are going to kill the red heifer and rebuild the temple. And then the real Messiah comes. And the religion industry is going to make Jesus get in his holy rolls and come back to earth and start slaughtering Jews. This is not a pic. This is not a recipe for success.
No, no, it isn't. I think not.
I mean, I'm scared. We are in the clutches of crazy people who are hell bent on fighting a war between tastes great and less filling. And it's you and me and the people that we love and care about, Jim, that are going to get blown into a pink mist.
Well, the trouble is they don't realize it, but they're the ones who are going to be blown just as equally as high and going to end up as dust in the stratosphere.
Well, see, we know that, but they think that when they reach a certain level of the stratosphere, they're going to grow angel wings and fly off to be home with the Lord.
Do you really believe that?
I don't. They do.
I mean, do you really think they believe that?
Jim, nothing I say on this program should be taken for granted or taken as gospel. Find it out for yourself. RaptureReady.com. RaptureReady.com. I don't just say things. This place has got hundreds of members who sit there and chat back and forth to each other on their message boards, wondering about whether or not they're going to grow wings at the rapture, will they just go poof and be in the presence of Jesus, or will they actually get to fly like Superman? It's there, Jim. And yes, they believe it. And the best part of it for them is when all is said and done, then they get to start killing them some Jews.
I don't understand that because I thought that the Jews were supposed to be able to have some type of second chance to...
Well, they do. They do. They get a second chance according to this apocalyptic nonsense. But the ones who don't confess Christ... they expect, Jesus is going to look over at Franklin Graham and say, stick him. And Franklin Graham's going to go with the sword.
You know, Bob, I just don't have that type of concept of Christ, because to me, if in fact Christ returns and he won't need a golden rose, I can assure you of that. That would be enough to convince anybody that, hey, this is the real thing. And I don't think anybody would contest that, do you? I think even the hardest, most hard-bound atheist, if he were to witness the miracles that are forecast in, say, the Book of Revelation, if he were to visualize that, I think that would be enough to convert just about anybody, don't you think, without their having to be killed?
No, but see, that's the thing about Revelations. Revelations is a coded message to the faithful in that same time period. It's not prophecy, Jim.
Well,
all these freaks want to believe that it is, and that they can sit around and they can calculate the number of the beast. It's all a commentary on Nero's Rome. That's all it is.
Well, there are many theologians that have many theories about that particular book of the Bible, and there is one which you've just mentioned, but who knows, I don't, and I make no pretensions of knowing, and that's all I can say, but I do know that we have a born-again idiot for a president who really ought to read Emily Post and understand what she's talking about.
Have you seen the video, the chewing with the mouth open thing, Jim?
Yeah, that was ridiculous. It was just absolutely... It made me very much ashamed to have that man as my president. I mean, anybody can eat with reasonably decent table manners and not over talk with their mouth full.
And again, I'm not all Emily Post or anything. I'm not going to hold it against a guy for not knowing which fork you use on the shrimp and which one you use and what the difference between a shrimp and a prawn or drinking his wine out of the wrong kind of glass. Yeah, I'm not there for that. But,
well, I'm sure Al Capone had better table manners.
Well, I don't doubt it. But this is a guy who is carrying on a conversation, and you can see the food in his mouth. Daggummit!
Well, you know, here's the thing. If I were the cameraman for Soviet TV, or not Soviet, for Russian television, that would be just like getting a Peabody Award to have that on, you know, on tape. And the Russians, of course, are going to use it. Because I think deep down inside, they know Bush for what he is.
Well, it doesn't...
They're very smart people. Putin is a very smart man.
Yeah.
He is highly intelligent.
Why do you think he led the poor little fella down the garden path and let him think that he saw into his soul?
My point exactly. I mean, Mr. Putin made his living learning how to make people say things that they did not want to say by using any means possible, by all possible means. And that's been his career all of his life. And how do you think he has risen to such a position of prominence in the current regime that controls the Russian Republic? So, you know, QED, there it is.
Well, how does... At the end of the day, when he's got his footy pajamas on and everything, Jim, what goes through what passes for that man's mind? Is he embarrassed? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
That's the thing about George Bush.
I think he thinks that he's just done a wonderful job, and he has really just presented the best of American-style leadership, and I'm sure he sleeps very soundly at night.
You know, cowboys talk with their mouth full.
Well, it's that type of butch type of, you know, machismo thing that he thinks that the world just loves to listen to. And I'm afraid that he isn't aware of the fact that no one is wearing him this year.
Well put,
out of fashion for a very long period of time.
Very well put. Very well put.
You know, it's certainly no Givenchy, that's for sure. It's more like Walmart pantsuits to Lara.
You know, you can't get near him with a match because of the polyester.
I don't know what's going to happen. I really don't. And it's very frightening to me. And, you know.
Well, whatever happens is good. If there's any cessation to the madness in the Middle East, it's going to come by virtue of the hard work and concerted efforts of the rest of the world. Because this man and his government, truly, Jim, are the dictionary definition of being disengaged.
Yeah, they are. As a matter of fact, last night, to take my mind off of it, I even watched a movie called Soul Plane. I recommend it highly.
Okay.
Starring Tom Arnold and Snoop Doggy Dogg, you know.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's a riot.
You seen that movie?
Hell yeah.
Well, on that note, I'm going to leave you to your...
All right. Well, thank you, Jim.
Devices.
Have a good evening. We're just going to wrap it up here. You take care now.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for the thoughts. Bye now. Look at where we have been tonight. Everywhere. Started out rock solid serious. Well, wait. Since we were talking, we've got a couple of minutes, and I want you to hear this. Laura, our good friend in Michigan, mentioned this. Because of all of this apocalyptic hooey that is actually driving American foreign policy, I want you to, now I know, say that he has no credibility and move on. But these are the marching orders. And I want to end with this tonight, because understand that this is the thinking of a lot of America that thinks it can survive World War III. This, of course, is their little Goebbels.
It's all of this restraint and cessation of hostilities is just a bunch of garbage, folks. They gave them Gaza. They pulled out of South Lebanon. Now they want to destroy Israel. So what is this restraint business? Israel just supposed to sit back? I had a conversation when I was gone. Guy said, "You see the movie Munich?" I said, "No, I haven't seen it. I've got it on DVD." But anyway, watch, a brilliant movie. You got to watch. It was all about these Israelis that went in and sought revenge after the 72 Olympics. And the commandos finally said, "You know what? Doesn't matter. We kill them, they kill us back, and it never stops." So what are we supposed to do then? They're not supposed to avenge what happened to the 72 Olympics? All is moral equivocation. There are no good guys or no bad guys. Everybody, you know, we just have to stop the killing. Well, all right. And guess who has to be restrained? The good guys. Israel has to be restrained. But when Hezbollah attacks, or Hamas attacks, or Iran through proxies attacks, why, that's somewhat understandable because Israel shouldn't be there. Israel transplanted itself. It's those people's country. And they're so poor. And they're so bedraggled. And nobody wants them. Who can blame them for what they're doing? But we can always blame Israel. Here's the key. Are we going to take care of Iran now before it has nukes, or are we going to wait until we can't do anything?
There it is.
That's the key here. Iran is nothing more than a third-rate dictatorship. It's not supported by its own people. Very restive population there. It's a Jimmy Carter legacy, which has to be ended. Now, Israel can't do this.
Most of the day.
Turn Israel loose on Iran. Israel can't do it, folks. They can't take care of Iran without us. Iran is too far away for their ground forces. It's too far away for their fighter jets to run bombing missions and to get back. But just think, ask yourself a hypothetical. If we were doing to Iran what Israel is doing in Lebanon, that might be enough. We don't need to go in and occupy Iran. Anything that takes its place can't be any worse if we were to root out the current Mullah regime, and that has to be objective number one. That's why I think
can't
this
be
is
any
a
worse.
Gift to the world, folks. This is an opportunity finally to do something about Iran. Iran is the elephant in the room in all of this. And if we sit here and say it's Hezbollah or it's Assad or it's Syria or it's Hamas, we are blaming the tentacles and not the brain. And Iran is the center and the focus of this, and that's why this is a gift.
Okay.
So I hear the voices, but I'm the decider.
Right. So you understand, Flush Flimball, not credible to us. We're intelligent. But that man does not say a word on American public policy that has not first been scripted for him by the Bush administration. If he says that the slaughter of the Lebanese is a gift to the world, a gift to the United States, that permits us to slaughter Iran, you can bet your last dime that Feith or Pearl or Wolfowitz or Condi or Cheney likes him, that he has been handed that and told that that is the talking point because Iraq is lost. Iraq is lost. And so, dear leader needs a new war. A brand new spanking shiny war with blood and guts and horror and death and mayhem yet to come. He needs that.
There are some who feel like that...